Hi, this is Rick Emerson, and the following encore of The Rick Emerson Show is brought to you by Squires Electric. Whether it's electrical wiring, Ethernet wiring, or wiring of any kind at all in your home or business, Squires Electric can make your life easier. Find out more at squireselectric.com or call 503-252-1609. Squires Electric.
Listen, Ace. You and I have to have a man-to-man talk here about your whoopee. Your whoopee's looking bad, bud. Now, wait a minute. Now, listen to me. I understand that you little guys start out with your whoopees and you think they're great. And they are. They are terrific. But pretty soon, the whoopee isn't enough. You're out in the street trying to score an electric blanket or maybe a quilt. And the next thing you know, you're strung out on bedspreads, Ken. That's serious. Now, give me the whoopee.
No.
Kenny, come on, man.
No.
Okay. Give it to me for a couple of days. If it doesn't work, you got the whoopee back. Please. You got a lot of guts.
Minutes after the hour of one, and this the month of March in the year of our Lord 2011. Thank you for coming by and making a part of your listening day. We are live from the plushly appointed yet not overly ostentatious studios of the Emerson News Network, looming high above the milk packing district here in glorious southeast Portland, Oregon. Thank you for joining us. It is the Rick Emerson Cavalcade of Whimsy, a collection of chuckles and giggles aplenty. If you would like to join us today, it's 503-505-6964. You can also email, if you like, it is rick@rickemerson.com. rick@rickemerson.com. It's 503-505-6964 or rick@rickemerson.com is the email address. Dawn, D-A-W-N, dawn@rickemerson.com. That is her email address. You can also, you can also message us via Skype if you like. I just want to have something put in my head. I just want to have a chip in my head that I can turn on or off, you know, like at will or whim, and just, you know, but so the people just send me stuff and it just arrives in my brain.
I was going to disagree with you about that until then you said you could turn it off.
Yeah.
Because if it was just on all the time, because I know what happens when I forget to turn the sound off on my phone. Like, it woke me up in the middle of the night the other night. Like, I can't remember what it was. It was either, like, somebody sent me a text message or, like, Eric Snyder did a turn on Words with Friends or something. And my phone was charging in the bathroom and all of a sudden it just woke me up going, bring, and lit up. And I just was like, I sat straight up in bed and had no idea what was going on.
Hey, can I just tell you what I did last night for the first time ever? Rick Emerson did something. I wasn't even going to talk about this, but you know, you brought it back. You jolted it out of the restive place of my memory where it was residing, and now it's back in the forefront of my thoughts. I did something last night successfully for the first time ever, and it's not what you're thinking, or is it? It's not.
You have no idea what I'm thinking.
Wait, hold on. You are disgusting. All right, well, in any event, so we'll talk about that in a second. And I swear to God, it's not going to be tedious and off-putting, though it does have to do with my iPhone, but that's just incidental. It could have to do with anything, but it just happens to be my iPhone. But that's sort of an ancillary, that is an adjunct facet of the story. It's the Rick Emerson Radio Program. It is Wednesday. Coming up later on the day, we're going to talk to Ms. Kelly Clark, Arts and Culture Editor from Willamette Week. It's her last appearance on the show before she goes on maternity leave. And I don't know why I keep saying that, except it just seems like she's been doing the show basically once a week or a couple times a month, like forever. I mean, for like 5 years or something now. So I think it's going to be the longest stretch we will have gone in quite a long time without talking to her. So she's going to be, I mean, not that she's going to be incommunicado, but I mean, I don't know. Who knows what women do after they have babies? They just sit around and they leak. I just don't know. I don't even know how that works. I don't know what's going on with that. I just, the only time I ever really saw that up close, I was like, you know, two days old. So I don't know how, I don't remember what it looks like. I'm just saying. So I think there's a lot of, you know, whatnot that happens. So, but we'll talk to her today about a whole lot of things, including, you didn't get to see this in color, though, this picture of the woman eating chicken.
Oh.
Kelly sent me this.
Is that actually in here somewhere?
I believe it's from the issue, but she sent us this overview because it's their Cheap Eats 2011, yeah. Which is the sort of, you know, 150 places to eat. And then she ends the email by saying, now enjoy this photo of a woman eating chicken.
There it is.
Yeah, isn't that great?
That's on page 7 of the Willamette Week Cheap Eats
thing. It's great and sort of off-putting in a way you can't quite quantify.
It's kind of, it's me, basically. That's me.
That's a terrible thing to say. It's but we're going to talk to her about that. We also got the we're going to get to her see if there's any incidental or additional information about the closing of Rocco's, which is bizarre because the Mercury did a thing on it and then the Willamette did a thing on it. I mean, Grant Butler published something in the Oregonian, but it was still just basically the same sentence and a half, which is just Rocco's was there for 18 years and then it closed without warning. Like even the guy who was like who manages the place said he got like a couple hours notice. Where they basically came by and said, about that job you had. No. And then they, you know, click, gone. And so if it sounds like I'm sort of fixating that, I guess I sort of am, except I sort of am, which I wouldn't be, except that I, you know, not only, you know, is it in downtown where a lot of people, you know, where many Portland stars go to eat.
Well,
but
also
it's been an iconic part of that section of town for like 20 years.
Yeah, it was right across the street from Powell's, and they always had pretty darn good pizza. And I remember, I don't remember, God, it was probably about maybe 12 or 13 years ago that they had a fire and they were closed down for many
months. I
don't
remember that. That must have been right before I moved here.
Yeah, they were closed down for a number of months and it was kind of crippling to a lot of people because it was like, no Rocco's. What am I going to do without Rocco's?
Well, especially because if you're in that part of town, if you're going to a club or you're going to a bar, you're going to a show, you're at Powell's late. It's like there's not a lot of places to eat down there if you don't want to go to a bar. That's what sucks about it. And you know, and then it's like the conversations have already started about like, what are they going to put there? Is it just going to be some other place where it's like greased up Jersey Shore a-holes are going to be, you know, where you can stand outside and be told you're not allowed to go into a place? Or are they going to put in, you know, like, because we need, are they going to decide that we need like another Baja Fresh or something?
God.
That's what I'm saying. It's like you don't want it to be that.
Yeah.
You know? But it's like who, you know, it's going to be one of those like pasta to go places or something. I just don't know.
It's making me sad now.
Well, and the thing about Rocco's is that it had such a great, I mean, it's not like it was a culture that was unique to Portland, but it did have, it was not like going into Mike Clark's movie Madness or something, where you would just see like the strangest combinations of people rubbing elbows at Rocco's. I mean, brought together by the universal glue that is pizza. And you would just see some guy with like, you know, with like a handful of mom's cutlery in his face. Next to some guy who was just like on his lunch break from like some sort of button-up business. And then it's like, I'd be there. And it was just the strangest group of people, largely because it was in that there's that confluence of all the, you know, where there's like Powell's, but then there's like all the like the late night kind of clubs, but then there's like an actual business district, but then there's like all the gutter punks that sort of hang out there and they're scraping together spare change for food, and the, you know, just a whole, it was a great sort of slice of Portland that is gone from this place. Let's see. So Kelly Clark going to join us today. Clergy watch, penis watch, clown watch.
And one of those may get swapped out for a cannibal watch.
Really?
Yes, because we have a cannibal watch.
It's exciting. So we got all those things coming up in the, and more or less, depending. Also, clue number three for this week's Name That Snack contest. That is clue number three for this week's Name That Snack contest. Let's see, what else was I going to say? It seemed like there was something else that was happening that was, I was all agog, I was all a Twitter, I was all a flutter, I was verklempt. I was, well, don't forget, this coming Sunday, that is March 13th, this coming Sunday at the Beaverton Big House location, we're going to be there as part of the Sleep Country Foster Kids Pajama Bowl. Listeners, Jenny and Rob were in yesterday to talk about that. Last time I checked, we're really just trouncing the Geek in the City team. I'm really just within inches of their nerdy existence. So keep it coming. You can continue to donate to that. That is a good cause, and you can do so by donating at rickemersonshow.com. You go go there, and there's going to be a link to the Sleep Country Pajama Bowl event, which is happening this coming Sunday, March 13th. Don Taylor is tracking the following headlines for you on this Wednesday.
A burglar is caught with his daughter along for the ride. I for some reason just put these things aside
well
and completely failed to get them. A man uses scissors to get stabby when he doesn't like his haircut, and the founder of American Apparel apparently had a sex slave.
Really?
Yeah.
Okay, well, good for him. Or bad for him. I don't know. Yeah. When you say slave, what are we talking about?
A sex slave. Like, turned a teenage employee into a sex slave.
But, like, the sexy kind? Well, I guess that's
it. Well, the kind of demeaning kind. You know, the kind of held prisoner and demeaned
kind. So an actual sex slave.
Yes.
Not like a sort of sex slave.
Yeah, I think we probably wouldn't hear about it if it was something that was kind of consensual and fun-loving.
Well, I thought it was maybe just sort of like a sort of the gimp from Pulp Fiction who was presumably into it in some way, you know, and just sort of a, you know, how are you today? You know, okay, that's great.
Yeah, it probably wouldn't be a news story then. It would be kind of a, people would just go, oh, that's nice, and then just move on with their lives.
Hey, let me ask you this. Did you know that there's a...
Axe away.
Don't ask how I know this. Did you know that we were talking about creating our own porn fetish or niche or whatever. Do you know there's an entire industry of just like regular porn in every sense, but this one, that instead of having sex with people, it's just like guys getting out with those real dolls.
Well,
what's up with that?
Yeah, no, I did know about that because I first found out about that several months ago.
It's just odd because the thing is they look, I mean, I'm not saying you can't tell them apart, but I mean, they are for all intents and purposes a doppel of a real person. So like just seems pointless.
There's a particular real doll who has her own line of videos.
That's weird.
And she is the star of the videos.
I mean, you know, whatever anybody's into, so to speak. But I don't understand. Like, it's one thing if it's a guy getting it on with, like, a Craftmatic or something. Because it's like, that is, I guess that appeals to maybe part of your imagination that wasn't being satisfied earlier. But if you're having sex with something that, you know, in a sort of Polar Express way, looks like a real woman. Like, then you've just come full circle, almost. I mean, can't you just get a real chick and just tell her not to move?
Well, yeah, because, like, well, it seems
just
to me...
Just go limp.
It strikes me that the whole idea of having the real doll is usually because these are gentlemen who have some sort of
social issue
that they can't get themselves a real lady, or they themselves have, I guess, a specific fixation with having sex with a woman who can't say no or you know, will always be pliant
and
to whatever they want to do.
Not in the Oklahoma way.
But the idea of watching someone do that.
That's what I'm saying.
I don't get that at all.
See, and that's
maybe like watching someone have sex with a chair, which probably is also a fetish.
But see,
I'm
a chair
unaware.
At least doesn't look like an act, like a thing that is already film of. That's my thing. Is like, why would they even? A real doll's like $6,000. How much would it cost to get some chick and just say like, don't blink for a while, you know? Or just hold your breath for you know, when I'm in the camera's not on you. You
or
know
just
what?
Have sex with a lady and turn the film on it like they did when I was young.
Exactly.
That kind of porn was good enough for us.
It's not like I'm even offended by it. It just seems pointless.
Yeah.
It seems like you were over-solving the problem there.
Yeah.
So, all right. Well, I have no real reason for bringing that up. It just struck me as, I don't even know why that. Oh, you were talking about the sex slave thing.
Yeah.
So, and I didn't know if that was if it was a sex slave or if it was one of those sort of, you know, like somebody calls somebody else daddy and somebody calls somebody else like, you know, and there's a safe word of cantaloupe or something. And I just didn't, you know. Really, we get under the thin ice where just my knowledge is just like so scant that it almost is non-existent. You are listening to the Rick Emerson radio program, so that's all coming up. Those headlines: clergy watch, penis watch, clown watch, quite possibly a cannibal watch. Also, Kelly Clark from Willamette Week. Let's see, what else we have coming up today? Again, clue number 3 for the Name That Snack contest. Well, I'll just say this. I didn't really have any... I'll do these in reverse order. Stop. Reverse it. I was going to congratulate you on finishing yesterday's show without vomiting everywhere. But then I decided that would just be too blunt of a way to put it, because that would be a blunt tool used to describe the way you made it through yesterday's program, because you were feeling a little bit ill, and as the show went on, you were feeling more and more ill.
Yeah,
and so
I was white knuckling it there towards the end.
That's the thing, is like it was really just sort of coming in waves, in that like you would be fine, and then later you'd clearly be not so fine, and you would be sitting there, and it's like sort of gripping the side of the desk and just doing that thing of like, okay, breathe shallow, breathe in, out, okay, keep it together. just we're going to be in a break in like 10 minutes. And it was that thing of when you sort of, you see somebody that's riding a roller coaster and they're not entirely certain that they're enjoying it. Mm-hmm. And then later on, it becomes very, very clear that they are not enjoying it, but they have no choice. So they are just hanging on for the ride.
And I had warned you and Rob and Jenny. I said, if I just get up and run out of the room, if I just suddenly leave for some reason, it's not you, it's me. Yeah.
So. Is this the same thing you had over the weekend?
Yeah, I think it was. I think it's I'm at the tail end of whatever this virus is that I came down with on Friday afternoon, and it's almost over now. But yeah, last night I was quite ill. I got home. It was one of those things where I was just like, I will finish my work because I had to type some things up, and I'm like, I will finish this and I will go home. I will finish this. And I. You know, ran off to the restroom a few times, came back, I will finish. And I got in the car, I was driving home just going, and I'm just like, all day yesterday, I was like sweaty and shivery and cold. And then I would get like so hot, I thought I was going to die. And it was really super warm in here and I was running a fever. And it was, and so yeah, so I just driving home last night, I was like going, just get home before you die. Don't die in the car, get home. And I got home and I walked in and Pat's like, my husband, of course, is in a great mood. He's like, hey, how you doing? I'm like, going to bedroom. Ah. You know, I just went into the bedroom and just collapsed.
This is like last week because, you know, Laura had this thing where she, and everybody does seem to be getting this. Because Scott Landerville, who's you know, on the part of the bowling team, was not here yesterday because he said he didn't want to make anybody on the show sick. So
yeah,
so
there we go.
Stayed away. But you know, Greg and Sarah had something over there, and Laura, basically everybody but me, you know, so far, like knock wood. But it was like I went home, I don't know, it was maybe like 8-9 days ago, and it was like Laura had gone to bed kind of early because she was feeling a little under the weather and had to work as well, so she went to bed early. When I went into the bedroom to like pick up my clothes or whatever for the next day, and I swear to God, it was that thing. If it had not, it was that thing that was equal parts adorable and sort of pathetic, where she was in bed and I swear to God, she had a winter hat on. She like had her outdoor like Eskimo with like the ear flaps. Like she had like her ear flap winter like snowshoeing hat on. And then I said, What are you doing? You got a hat on in bed. She's like, I'm so cold. I've never been more cold in my life. And she had like 75 quilts on. The heater is going. It's like 190 degrees in the room. She's got she's got like the Nanook of the North outfit going on. And then I looked and she was like fully dressed. She had like pants and like thermal, you know, whatever, like a waffle weave shirt, and then like a huge sweater on, and like three pairs of socks and a hat underneath all of this. And it was just one of those things where. But then, of course, I go to bed about an hour later, and what happens? And there's so many covers in the bed, I can't even move. I mean, it's like I'm just pinned. It's like my muscles are just atrophied. I can't even move underneath all of this. What happens at around 2 in the morning? Suddenly, oh my God, it's so hot. I've never been more. And, you know, and it was that horrible thing where you go, oh God, we're going to get to go through this again for like 3 months in about, you know, 30 years. That's the best part, you know? Like at some point in the next couple of decades, this is going to be another thing that happens, but it's going to last for weeks and weeks and weeks on end. So this is just a small little preview of what nature has in store for me. So that'll be awesome.
Yeah. I got home last night, went home, was doing that shivery cold thing, went into the bedroom, got into bed, just told Patrick, I'm taking cold medicine, sleeping, wake me up in a couple of hours if I'm not up. I got up a couple hours, you know, and he came and woke me up later, and I like kind of got out of bed, and he looked at me going, are you still wearing pants? And it's like, yes, I had just taken off my shoes and otherwise gotten into bed fully dressed and just guzzled down some cold medicine and slept for 2 hours. Then I got up and just sat out in the living room. But then last night when I finally went to bed, tried to go to bed, couldn't sleep. So I got back up, and then about 1:30 or 2, I said, okay, I'm tired enough to go to sleep. Got into bed, couldn't sleep. Went, well, maybe if I take some more cold medicine, it'll help me sleep. So I take the cold medicine, and what it does, I had that backlash effect, where then that just made me extra jittery.
Right.
So then I got up again. So I think I probably got about 4 hours of sleep last night total. Sometime around 6 o'clock this morning, the alarm went off, and Pat got up, and he's like, oh, hi, you're awake. He's looking at me strangely because I'm not sound asleep. I'm going, I didn't fall asleep till like 4. Are you walking to work today? Because I feel like crap.
That's the thing where you know you're really sick or really, really exhausted when you don't mind falling asleep like in your pants. Because typically that's a thing I can't do. A lot of people have no problem napping in their, you know, just like fully dressed. But I get the chafing and the binding and the whatever. And it's like, but if you just, that is the litmus test for if you're truly ill. If you're just like, I can't even undress it. And then you're just totally asleep. I do have to say, though, that as we were just finishing Legion of News, and it was like in the little 20-minute break between Legion of News and this show, I said, well, you sound a lot better today. And he said, and I know that you clarified later that this is not what it was supposed to sound like, but you just said, yeah, I think I managed to blow most of that sickness out last night, which is just the best image. I don't even really know what you would be referring to specifically, but it's awesome and horrible sort of all at once. So,
yeah.
Well done.
And then my husband gave me dinner, and I watch. And I mentioned, I trying to catch up on these things. People keep suggesting TV series.
Right.
And I'll watch them. And usually what happens is I watch them and I go, yeah, it's okay. Like somebody suggested the TV show Episodes, which has got some British actors I like.
Oh, that's that Matt LeBlanc thing?
Yeah. And it was okay. I kind of liked it. So I was like, but it didn't really grab me. I didn't feel need to go back to it. So then last night I gave another one a try. And I watched the first episode of this Shameless, which is on Showtime, which is and if the rest of it is as good as that first 1 hour of programming, this could very well be my new favorite TV
show.
What
is Shameless?
Shameless is the showrunner is John Wells,
right,
who
from
did
the West Wing.
West Wing and ER, and basically it's about a family living a dirt poor family living in Detroit or Chicago. I think they're in Chicago, and it's a family, six kids, no mom. Dad, played by William H. Macy, is just a useless drunken lout.
I haven't even heard of this.
And the kids are basically on their own. The oldest daughter is 19-ish or something like that. And a couple of young teen boys going down to a toddler. And basically the kids are kind of on their own and have to take care of themselves. And there's no real good way to describe the show succinctly. It's about...
It's a
comedy drama.
Okay.
And it's in the same way that something like The West Wing or ER were. There's a lot of humor in
madcap mix-ups.
But the thing is, they're like below like lower class.
Right.
They are like no class. They are like scraping to get by. The kind of family where like, you know, the neighbor distracts the milkman with her cleavage while the kid next door opens up the back of the milk truck and steals like butter and cream and half and half.
A hard scrabble existence.
Yeah, that sort of thing. And then William H. Macy as the dad who just is completely useless and spends all their money on booze and then comes home every night and passes out face down on the
Shameless.
Living room floor. And it's called Shameless, and it is, I can't really describe it. The first hour of that show was so complex. And so much happens in it, and it's so very, very good.
Wait, did this just... How far into the run is it?
This is the first season, and I think there's been 8 episodes so far.
Interesting.
Like
I will
that.
Totally watch that. I'm just based on your description of it and your endorsement. I will completely watch it. Shameless.
Yeah.
Awesome.
And it's based on a British show, you know, I don't know. I think it was originally produced for HBO, and then HBO dropped the ball along the way, and Wells got Showtime to pick it up.
Showtime's real hit or miss. I mean, it's like we were talking yesterday that, you know, for a while I was really on the Californication thing, but I've kind of drifted away from that, and then Dexter's kind of gone in the toilet for me. And there's this. What else is there? Anything else on Showtime that's of note? Because all the stuff that is the marquee programming seems to end at HBO. It's like their choice to pick up or decline
but
stuff.
Is Weeds Showtime?
Weeds is Showtime.
Because I had liked Weeds and then I kind of lost interest in Weeds.
Mara loves that show.
I enjoyed, I really enjoyed the first season or so of Nurse Jackie.
That's the Edie Falco.
Yeah, and show. But not enough to actually follow it up. The thing with Weeds and Nurse Jackie is they're both half-hour shows,
right,
and they were running back-to-back, and it just wasn't really enough for me to, like, you know, seek it out.
Weeds is like 7 seasons in or something. I think
yeah.
They just finished the 6th. And Lara's a huge, huge fan of that. She keeps trying to get me to watch it, but
The first couple of seasons of it were very, very good.
Apparently it develops a lot, though. I mean, I guess it morphs into some totally different... Apparently there's a lot of character change that happens on that show.
Yeah.
Where they end up... In fact, they because there's that whole thing with the first few seasons where every episode starts with that, like, little houses made of ticky-tacky thing. Which I guess at one point they ditch altogether because it no longer takes place in the suburbs,
right,
and they're like on the lam in Canada or something. So
yeah, I followed it through to the point where like she set her neighborhood on fire and they moved to San Diego,
yeah,
and she had a tunnel in her store like and started having sex with a Tijuana drug lord, and I somehow lost the thread along the way.
This is not a spoiler, by the way, and it's not a spoiler because it's a thing that the creator said in a magazine interview. So this is the creator has said this publicly, so this is not a spoiler, and he hasn't said it's going to happen, but he is he or she, whoever the creator said that this is how they suspected that it was going to end with what's her name, with Mary Louise Parker's character just being killed.
Well, I can see that.
Yeah, and can I just tell you? You want to talk about? She is just hot as balls. I am the hugest fan of her. I am just a massive fan of her. She should be in everything. She and Paula Marshall should star in she and Paula Marshall and that chick you were showing me last week who
Liz Vassy?
Yes. They should be the three. They should be everywhere. They should star in everything. It doesn't matter. It doesn't matter who the role is. I don't care if it's a John Madden biopic. They should be the stars of everything. This is why you realize that it's not a good. You realize why it's not a good thing to become a dictator, but you realize why people do become dictators. Because if I were some sort of Kim Jong-il, I would just pass an edict tomorrow. Like, Glorious Ruler has issued a decree saying that only Paula Marshall and Liz Vassy and Mary Louise Parker are allowed to star in anything. So.
Oh, and in a less sexy note, but still good. Also, this show, Shameless, one of the characters, really a great, great, crazy mom role. Finally something for her to sink her teeth in after a while, Joan Cusack.
Really?
I dig her.
And her character is just delightful.
Boy, almost never has a speech impediment been hotter than with Joan Cusack. Because she just has that thing where she sounds like Stan Marsh's sister. Listen up, turds. I'm going to be listening to my Britney Spears records. The last thing I saw Joan Cusack in that I remember, and this is now 90 years ago, that I remember liking her in a lot was School of Rock. That's been forever ago. I know she's done stuff since then, but
Did you ever see her her document? It wasn't even a reality show. It was a Discovery Channel show or something with her. Yeah, with her wandering around and having adventures and going places and
finding
really out
think
about
of
stuff.
Joan Cusack having adventures.
No, it was very strange. It was very odd. But she was like, I'm going to Latvia and I'm going to go to this place and learn how they make cheese. It was very strange. And it was Joan Cusack.
I'm here to make some cheese.
Yeah.
And then she's the voice of what's her name in Toy Story. Is she the voice of the Susie or Skippy or the cowgirl, whatever her name is?
So, yeah.
Which I thought was, I guess I thought was Holly Hunter for some reason. Maybe because the toy itself sort of looks like Holly Hunter. And so I thought that, but Pixar doesn't typically do that. Pixar sort of eschews that thing where they make the character look like, the voice actor. So.
Something else I discovered recently on Fox, there's in their animated show slate that they do on like Fridays or whatever it is with American Dad and Family Guy and stuff like that. Smack in the middle of it and not really promoted very well is a new show called Bob's Burgers. And it's H. John Benjamin, who did home movies. And it's very, very funny and very odd. But it's kind of crammed in the middle of this, Family Guy Cleveland show kind of thing, and I just and so it's kind of you got and they put it in that 8:30 slot, so you kind of have to know it's there and make sure you find it, but it's really, really funny.
Bob's Burgers.
Yeah,
excellent. The thing, I was just thinking about Family Guy the other day. Family Guy is one of those shows, and it's very rare that something will actually do this. Normally it takes some sort of weird grandma porn or something but it's where you watch Family Guy and it's I hate myself while I'm watching it. I'm watching and I just am filled with such self-loathing while I watch Family Guy. I just hate myself. I hate everything about myself. I hate my taste in life. I hate the choices I've made that have brought me to this place in my existence. And then when the show's over, I feel fine again. But it's but I'll watch it and I'll snicker, and the whole time I'm just filled with the most hideous self-loathing.
Yeah, I have a complicated relationship with Family Guy because I didn't like it at all when it first came on the air, and so then I avoided it. And then at some point later, I just gave it another try and was like, okay, yeah, it is funny. And now I just I do have that. On the one hand, I feel like the premise has really, and his style has really played itself out. But then I watch it, and then there will be. Yeah, some of the stuff is so funny, but the stuff that is really funny is usually the stuff that is the most mean-spirited.
Yeah, well, or just, it's most mean-spirited, or just occasionally what they'll do is you know what Family Guy does really, really well sometimes? They have a great sense, not unlike The Onion, actually, of the strange angular absurdism that comes out of nowhere. And I don't just mean this is worse than that time that Fat Albert ran Guantanamo or whatever.
Yeah.
But they'll just do something that is so completely, so completely out of left field and makes no rational sense. But then they depict it and you laugh despite yourself. You know what you... Did you... Let me ask you this. We're so far afield here, but we'll do one more television thing and then we got to get underway. But did you ever watch... the, because I know you have a, speaking of people with whom you have a complicated relationship, did you ever watch the Clerks animated series?
Yeah.
The Clerks animated series was fantastic. It was really good.
It was far superior to the movie, which I've never had the love for that a lot of other people
it
have.
It was quite good.
It really was.
And the way that they inverted a lot of television sort of tropes, like the fact that I think it was like on the second episode featured Dante and Randall being locked in a freezer and having a whole, like, do you remember that time? And it was all stuff from the previous week, which was the pilot. And the entire episode was just flashbacks of the pilot, which had just aired a week beforehand. I mean, which was awesome. But this never aired on the ABC version, because ABC, they cut this joke. They wouldn't let them show it. And so it's on the DVD. ABC also screwed that show, by the way, by showing it out of order, like the same thing they did to Firefly. For example, on the Clerks animated series, that gag where the second episode is all flashbacks of the first episode, ABC, of course, put that episode, like, last, so ruining the entire thing.
Yeah.
But there is this moment in, like, the third episode of the Clerks animated series that is one of the worst jokes, by which I mean it's just the worst, most horrible, cruel comedy. But God help you if you don't laugh at it. It's where Dante comes to the store and he goes, "Hey, Randall, what are you doing?" And Randall says, "I'm watching the latest offering from Steven Spielberg. It's a merging of his newfound desire to market to the children's audience along with his eye for franchising a marketable property that's established in the American mind." And then they cut to the television show, and he's watching a cartoon called Flintstones List. And it's all... and it's Flintstones List, and of course it's this World War II Holocaust cartoon drawn in the style of the Flintstones. And so there's just these sad Jewish prisoners who are all drawn like the sort of cave people from the Flintstones marching onto a train. And then it's like the train lifts up and it's like their feet are coming out the bottom. Oh. And they're just, and the train is going down the tracks with like all of these feet sticking at the bottom. And I remember watching that and it was the thing where I laughed and then tried to suck the laughter back in. I went, you know, just trying to put, because I just felt like such a horrible person. Flintstones List.
Flintstones List.
There you go. All right. Well, Kelly Clark is going to call us here in just a second. So,
well, I'd like to discuss something very briefly, but while we're waiting for her to call.
Is this like we have to have a talk about something?
No. It's okay. I have this bag here of the Blue Diamond wasabi and soy sauce almonds, which you ever had. One thing I hadn't noticed before, by the way. Now, you'll see on the, it says Blue Diamond almonds, bold wasabi and soy sauce.
Right.
On the back of the package, it gives you all the ingredients, and then it says peanut free, may contain other tree nuts.
Well, first of all, they're almonds, so of course they're peanut-free.
But also may contain other tree nuts. Almonds grow on trees. I don't think they have to say may contain other tree nuts. It has almonds in it. It's a bag full of almonds.
Oh, I see. So what is the deal, that they just have one stock warning they stick on everything,
apparently,
you suppose?
Apparently so.
Now, do almonds... I know this sounds dumb. Do almonds grow on trees?
Yes.
I think it was Laura and I were talking about this the other day. We couldn't figure out where nuts came from. It was like, we couldn't, like, because she said, like, what about cashews? Are they on trees or are they in a bush? And I said, and then she said, or are they underground? And I said, I don't know. And then I realized I had no idea.
I believe cashews are, the nut comes from what they call a drupe, which is a big fruit. And it's like a moist, meaty fruit. And they have to peel all the fruit away, and the cashews are in the middle of that.
Is it true that, is it peanuts that aren't actually nuts?
Right. Peanuts are actually grown in the ground. They're legumes.
Wait a minute.
They're related to beans.
What makes something a nut? In other words, if they're not peanuts, then there must be... If they're not nuts, then there must be a definition of what makes something a nut. I wonder what it is.
I used to know this. It has something to do... It's nuts are very similar to seeds. You can grow... You can plant nuts, and then... They will grow other things, I believe.
Okay.
Or it might be the reverse. They're not seeds because if you plant them, they don't grow. I can't remember.
Nuts are seeds, apparently.
Yeah.
Okay. So.
But here, you need to actually. You'll want to drink a little water, but you need to taste one of these because I want to. These are surprisingly good and have a surprising amount of kick for a basic over the counter. Product like this.
Well, what we'll do is this while I'm enjoying some of these. Wasabi and soy sauce, Blue Diamond almonds. I will let you, Don Taylor, okay. I will let you welcome to the Rick Emerson Radio program Ms. Kelly Clark from Willamette Week.
Hello, Kelly Clark.
Hey, you. Wasabi almonds? This is what I'm missing?
Yes. Wasabi and soy sauce almonds.
You know, I saw those for the first time. I was at Winco last night because I'm classy, so that's where I shop all the time. And they have like 16, like they have flavors of almonds not found in nature that for some reason I like bean dip and bacon almonds and wasabi cheddar. And they all sound good because they're almonds.
Well, I highly recommend the wasabi and soy sauce.
Okay, next time I go to Winco, which will be very, very soon, I know what to get.
Wow, these are fantastic.
Yeah, aren't they?
These are really, really good. You know, the thing about almonds is, and you were just noting this, they're like more expensive than gold, but I mean, they're so good. And the thing is, if you get yourself on an almond kick, you'll eat the entire bag just at a gallop without even really. These are really fantastic.
That's another reason I like the wasabi ones, because they really do actually have a really good wasabi bite. And once you get like six or seven of them, you know, in you, you start going, wow, that's hot. Wow, that hurts. And it slows you down, so you don't eat them so fast.
Wow. That's awesome. Okay. Now I got to, I'm sorry. See, now I got nut mouth going on.
Hold on. Nut mouth?
Yeah, I know. all right.
You can't talk to Kelly Clark with nut mouth.
No, I don't.
No, of course. It wouldn't be the first time, really.
Zang. Hello, Kelly Clark. How are you? How is your life? How are things? You're getting ready to go on maternity leave, are you not?
Oh, yes, I sure am.
So how long does that last?
About 3 months. So I have ample time to, I don't know what one does during maternity leave. I've never done it before. I'm assuming it involves a child, but also I'm hoping it involves a lot of going to dim sum and other restaurants where screaming children are welcome. So I'm going to try to think of it as a food vacation with child.
I was going to ask if you are looking forward to, because you mentioned last time you were on that being pregnant, there's certain things that you can just, social norms that you can ignore or niceties that you can just sort of eschew and people aren't allowed to criticize you. And so I was wondering, are you going to miss those things more than you are going to be relieved at the absence of people like bothering you and giving you unsolicited advice?
Yeah, it's pretty much a toss-up. I will not miss the extra weight or the small alien that is in my stomach who's deciding to do Tasmanian devil maneuvers all the time. So I think I'm looking forward to not being pregnant anymore.
All right.
Let's just put it that way.
You'll position that someday in the future. You just tell your child that it wasn't that mommy didn't enjoy being pregnant; it's that she just couldn't wait to see you. So that's how you put a positive spin on that.
Exactly.
Before we do anything else, I didn't get a chance to check my email just now. Let's see. Okay, I do see you did respond about this, because we've been talking for a couple of days now about just this sort of unexpected closing of Rocco's Pizza, which was a diagonal was catty corner from Powell's. And I know that because I've gotten responses from a lot of people about this already. I know it's a place that not everybody liked. I myself was a huge fan. I know many people were not. But is there any indication as to why that happened? Did it just sort of come out of the blue? Because you figure that's an advantageous place.
Yeah, we've actually tried to contact Rocco's about it, and we haven't gotten a response back yet. So we'll have it up on the website as soon as we find out something. We suspect it has something to do with them opening the bar, and maybe that put too big of a strain on the resources, but we don't know for sure. I mean, Rocco's has been around forever. Granted, it's not my favorite pizza place, but it's definitely, I mean, it's the heart, right in the middle of the heart of Portland. I mean, go get a slice, go to Powell's. You know, it is, in that way, it's special, so it's kind of a bummer to see it go. But, yeah, I will let you know as soon as we find out more. We suspect it has something to do with the bar, but we don't know for sure.
Pizza seems like one of those recession-proof industries, though, that it doesn't matter how poor people are or like how much they're trying to cut back or save money. That is an irreducible quantity in this country.
Man, do you know how many pizza shops there are down? And really good pizza shops we're talking about. I mean, just the ones that we talked about in Cheap Eats. And then there's like five or six wood-fired pizza carts in Portland. They're not even brick and mortar places, and I think at a certain point, maybe the pizza scale tips.
A good segue to talk about Cheap Eats 2011, which is 150 plus places where you can eat.
Yeah, if not more. Yes.
Yeah, it's like 100. Yeah, we were looking at the pull-out section today. It's just massive. So there's on the stands right now, and people can find it at better newsprint outlets everywhere. And there's also 25. Let me get this right for memory. 25 amazing things that you can put in your mouth for $7 or less.
Yes.
So what comes to mind when you think about the new installment of Cheap Eats? Like, what are the first things that come to mind that you really are a huge fan of, or things that you've recently discovered that people really ought to try?
You know, oddly enough, you know me, and what do I love? I love meat more than anything. I am the most pro-meat person there could possibly be. One of my favorite things I tasted for Cheap Eats this year is made of tofu, which is so bizarre. There is a place called Chiang Mai. It is a northern Thai place right on Hawthorne, probably like Hawthorne and, oh, I think 22nd, little tiny place that used to be the Italian joint. They deep fry tofu and then roll it in roasted coconut and serve it with a sweet peanut sauce. And I kid you not, it's like the most addictive thing in the entire universe. It's like a little tiny pie wedge of molten, happy, roasted coconut deliciousness. Like kind of savory, kind of sweet, and then you dip it in the peanut sauce, and then it's all, creamy and delicious.
I personally think you can pretty much dip almost anything in peanut sauce, and it'll taste good.
Makes it fantastic.
Yeah. But I'm telling you, like, tofu, I don't know. I mean, tofu always gets a bad rap, and it especially does for me because people, you know, trying to make it as a replacement for something else. Don't ever try to make it a replacement for meat. If you just make it into a candy bar, it is delicious.
I was actually just going to say that because, you know, it's not like people have a problem with soy in general or other soy products. Mm-hmm. So I was going to ask why the hate for tofu, like when we all decided as a country that was a thing we just loathed.
Yeah, it's because we try to replace things we already love. You can't replace bacon. You can't replace cheeseburgers. When you try to replace a cheeseburger with a soy product, you're going to immediately hate that soy product. It's not its fault. Just a soy curl has nothing on pork here. You can't replace pork with soy. But there are places in town, especially a lot of Asian restaurants, that don't make you choose. There, Bui Tofu, which is a tofu manufacturer in Northeast Portland, run by this really sweet, really sweet Vietnamese couple that's made tofu forever. One of their best-selling dishes is tofu wrapped around pork meatballs.
Okay, that sounds fantastic.
Yeah, it is, because then you get that, that earthy soy taste, and then like the oily pork taste, and those are two tastes that go trace. Just taste delicious together.
Oily pork taste.
I don't know. So this is my pro thing. That was the most surprising for me is Chiang Mai. They're called Tau Hu Tod, but you can just call them deep fried addictive tofu wedges with coconut and peanut sauce.
Talk to me a little bit about Pie Spot, which is on Southeast 32nd and Division.
Pie Spot is so awesome. It's it's one of those things that once you have it, it's like how did you ever live without it? It's a little personal. Pies, little tiny pie spots, and the best they do a personal pecan pie, and I have high standards for pecan pie. My mother-in-law makes probably the best pecan pie in the world, and theirs live up. They're toasty, they're not too sweet, they're not too gloppy, they're creamy, they're so rich, and they're tiny. They're little bite-sized ones. They're just enough for one person, so that's a place you definitely need to try.
We're immediately in some sort of Mexican standoff here, because I was about to open my mouth to say, well, my mother makes the best pecan pie on earth, and there's no place but we can agree on this, though, that whoever's relative or family it is that makes the best pecan pie, that the world is full of bad pecan pie. Pecan pie is one of those things that is, it's like,
pie.
I don't even order it. I mean, I really have to be given, and I love it. I love pecan pie, but it's so bad in most places that it's like I almost have to be talked into ordering it anywhere, because it's a disappointment like 98% of the time, because they just fill it with – because it's just filled with gelatin and crap.
Well, it basically tastes like bland nuts and wallpaper paste.
Right.
Except – and then like – and then a shot of insulin. I mean, that's basically what it – that's what I feel like most pecan pies that are not homemade, made by someone who is in your family, taste like.
Yeah.
And my husband's mother – ups the ante because she does chocolate pecan pie. It's got chocolate chips in it, and then it's got chocolate drizzles on top of it. Oh. And it's, yes, I love him, but man, that would have been a good inducement to marry him just for that.
That's fantastic.
Just to have access to her pecan pie on a semi-regular basis. Oh, it would have been worth
when
it.
You,
another thing, as long as we're talking about sweets, though, I think I've probably talked about my devotion to Cool Moon ice cream down in the Pearl.
Yes.
But have I ever talked about their two-scoop sundae?
Is this the thing that has the hazelnuts on it?
It's got hazelnuts. It's got homemade fudge. It's got amaretto cherries. And it's because their ice creams are not super sweet a lot of the time, like, it makes the most ridiculous sundae ever because, obviously it's still going to kill you and you'll die happy, but, like, it's not, like, you don't get that horrific head, that head rush.
Right.
It's just, like, it's huge. Like, two scoops, it's, like, $5, and you can share it and you can't finish the thing. I mean, they give you a very generous amount of everything. Fresh whipped cream, the fudge. The fudge is bittersweet. Oh, my goodness. It's so good.
You know, your voice dropped like 4 octaves just there.
I know.
You,
I really like it. So.
The thing about ice cream is, and it's like, Don, you've talked about stuff like this, where it's, ice cream is one of those things that theoretically, it should be, like, impossible to make bad ice cream because it's got, like, there's no moving parts. I mean, there's basically nothing in it. It's like, how hard can it be? And yet most of the time you get the ice cream, and it's just terrible.
Well, a lot of the time it's the texture, yeah. The texture's off, and the ingredients are off. You know, the simpler is the better, but a lot of people don't make it very simple, and Cool Moon does. I mean, they do a wicked chocolate, which is just a dark bittersweet chocolate, or they do the Mexican chocolate, which has chocolate and cayenne pepper in it. And it's great. I mean, it just, all it does is, like, you know, every cooking show you watch is like, oh, you put pepper in chocolate or coffee in chocolate to perk up the taste. Well, it's true. It tastes freaking wonderful. And even better if you can eat it in a sundae. I don't think I've had an ice cream sundae for years because, you know, it just kind of make you sick.
Right.
And I would happily I would be happily sick for a week.
You'd
after
take the illness. Burgers. The illness is a fair trade.
I would
for
take
this.
The illness. Yes.
Ugh. All right.
I'm hungry.
Yeah, seriously. The other thing that I wanted to ask you, the one other item you mentioned the and I think that it's actually just called fishy chips. There's.
Oh, is this the anchovies?
This is the Eurotrash. The breaded deep fried thing that they have at Eurotrash. But it's one of those. The thing about it is that, like, there's so many foods that, again, not unlike ice cream, it seemed like they ought to be easy to make, or it's like, how can you possibly screw up, like, blank, and yet they do. Sort of all the time. You go to restaurants and they just do terrible takes on things. But it is always impressive when they can, you know, when something can be taken and either just replicated in a way that is, where they're not trying to screw with it, or if they do some sort of adventurous twist on it that it ends up being, you know, that it does end up being fantastic.
I actually have not had the fishy chips yet. What it is, it's an anchovy. It's a breaded deep fried anchovy. And Ben Waterhouse, who is the editor of Cheap Eats, my assistant editor, swears by them. He is on a mission to get me to try these things.
Because it's the Spanish thing,
I will
thing,
report.
Right?
Yeah, it's a Spanish thing, yeah. And, oily as in the fish is oily, not oily like it's a gut bomb oily. He says they're amazing. The other thing that, I mean, there's probably two other places that I'm probably the most obsessed with right now for Cheap Eats. Have you ever heard of El Inca out in Gresham?
Don?
No.
Okay.
I don't get to Gresham much.
Really not as often as you.
It's a tiny Peruvian shoebox wonderland that the room is just a giant oven, a giant rotisserie where they spear whole chickens and then just let them rotate for hours and hours and hours. And their signature dish is just a chicken, a whole chicken roasted, you know, padded with, like, spices and then roasted. And then a pound and a half of French fries and six different sauces.
All right. I'm making a note of this. What is it called?
It's called El Inca.
El Inca.
El Inca. Yeah.
Awesome.
E-L space Inca. I-N-K-A. It's in Gresham. It's right on the main, right off the main drag in a strip mall off Gresham. And, I mean, you go in, they sell Inca Cola. They're playing, like, Peruvian flute music. And everyone in the restaurant is related to the owner except for you. And they will just bring you this giant platter. I think, man, it's like $11. I think it's $14 for the entire chicken. But, I mean, you can feed three or four people with it. Like a pound of fries. And then the sauces are like, there's a cilantro jalapeno cream sauce. There is some sort of yellow pepper sauce. And then they just bring you a squeeze bottle of mayonnaise. You know, just for fries.
Yeah. Well, you know, it's, you know, when in Rome. I should actually tell you, this is completely and totally true. I ended up not doing so, but today I very nearly wore my Inca Cola T-shirt because my wife had gone to Peru and she came back and she was like the biggest convert to Peruvian food in general. So it's like every city we travel to, anywhere we go anywhere, she's like on a quest to find good Peruvian food, which always is just like, and usually is a road to disappointment because it's like if you're in Provo, you know, it's not like you're really going to find. Yeah. like the, you know, like the taste of the Incas or something there. So she will be excited to hear about this place because she's always trying to find a place that has
She's going to love it. They have wonderful ceviche there. They've got a lot of traditional dishes. But, I mean, really, once you see the chickens and they're roasting in the giant oven, I mean, it looks like the oven that, like, you would – it looks like an oven from a fairy tale that you would try to, you know, throw your grandmother, you know, like an evil witch in. It's that big. It takes up an entire wall. It's massive.
I like a restaurant where they're going to spear a whole anything for me.
And I know I know people who've been there. I've heard about this place because the one thing people do mention is that it's in this completely nondescript strip mall in Gresham. So you wouldn't expect it to be as awesome as it actually is.
I like I like the idea that in Gresham there's various degrees of strip malls, and some of your more showy strip malls. They're gaudy.
I am a strip mall aficionado. One of my other favorite places, which, you know what, I'd have to look up the name because we have like four different Korean joints that are in Cheap Eats, and one I swear is called JDC, the other one is KDJ, and one is Duckaby, and I can never remember which is which. But one of them is, I'm trying to flip through, I think it's JCD Korean, and I'm trying to flip through our guide right now so I can tell you.
Is this like when you see like AAA Aardvark Towing or something where they're just trying to find something that's not taken?
It's because the names are so difficult that, excuse me, here it is, Jang Chong Dong Wok Jal Ball.
Okay,
That's the name of the place.
The abbreviation might come in handy.
It's called JCD Korean, that's what you call it, and when you want to talk about strip mall excellence, this place is wonderful. It's right next to I Love Sushi off Southwest Cedar Hills Boulevard in Beaverton. So if you're in Beaverton and you're over by Powell's, you know, or you have some errand for some reason out in Beaverton, you have got to get yourself to this place. They make some of the best Korean food in town. They make those beautiful Korean omelets. They do the bulgogi. They basically just the banchan, which is all the little bowls of all of the little pickle goodies that you get before the meal, are some of the best things you will ever taste in your life. Like sweet, sweet honey-soaked potatoes, really great kimchi. And it's run by this sweet little couple who is totally confused why you're in there and why you're not Korean, but still decides to serve you. And then you just sit and watch the Korean Sports Network and drink huge beers and eat some of, like, the best food you'll ever have.
You really...
It is in a trashy... It's just a trashy strip mall. You wouldn't give it a second look. In fact, I mean, they just put a sign up on it like 2 years ago, you know, all it says is JCD Korean, and it's so great.
You really enjoy being alive, don't you, Kelly?
What involves food, yeah.
You would have a second mouth actually attached somewhere if you could, just sort of, you know.
You know, this comes from years of being really picky. I grew up super picky as a kid. And I didn't really start enjoying food until I was in college. So I think I have a lot to make up for. And also the fact that I have these really embarrassing, like, I may talk about how much I love this Korean food and I will eat anything you put in front of me, but if you try to make me eat celery, I will vomit.
Well, fair enough.
I will vomit on you. Like, I am still a picky little snot-nosed kid about a lot of things, and so I think I might just try to, I may be just all the time making up for some of the idiotic things, like the fact that I still will pick lettuce out of a burrito.
Excellent.
If I see it. The
new issue is on Sands now. You can also read it online at wweek.com, the Cheap Eats issue of Willamette Week, out now. So I guess we will – I don't know that we won't talk to you, at all, but I know that you're going to be you're going to be on professional leave, on maternity leave anyway, for the next couple months. So
if there's anything about clown porn you need to consult me about or anything like that, feel free to call me. I will probably be bored during maternity leave. So, yes, if there's anything non-Willamette Week related that you think my personal expertise can help you with, I'm always here for you.
Well, congratulations to you and to David from everybody here
thanks.
At the Emerson News Network and from listeners around the globe.
Oh, you guys have a great day.
All right, Kelly Clark.
Hope you get to try out some of these places. Bye.
Kelly Clark, ladies and gentlemen, from Willamette Week. Awesome. Excellent. There you go. All right. Okay, here's the thing. I'm going to actually make a little note in my Franklin planner to bring food next the next time we have a discussion like this. Ooh, can I have
you want some more of these almonds
there? Yep. That's awesome. All right. And wait. Yeah. All right. Excellent. Fantastic. All right, we should take a break.
Okay.
I'll come back with more after this. It's Steve. Sorry. I'm doing that thing. Ow, just bit the inside of my mouth. Ow, wasabi. Ow, 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 ow. Back after this. Ow, ow. Don't go anywhere.
You're listening to the Emerson News Network. another song about Mexico. Well, I just can't help myself. I lost my old lady. Got my lures, got my bobbers, now I'm gonna go. Got off in the wrong direction. Found a hooker and lost my erection. So I had to lie in the letter to the boys back home.
Had to lie, had to lie.
Well, the good guys and the bad guys, would they never work past noon around here? They sit side by side in the cantinas, talk to senoritas and drink warm beer.
Listening to the Emerson News Network.
It is the Rick Emerson Radio Program. Thank you for joining us. 503-505-6964. Now, people are just sending us Family Guy jokes at which they laughed and then immediately felt bad. Such as when Brian says, like when you shook the baby to make it stop crying. And Peter says, well, it kind of worked. Okay. That's the only one I'm going to read. I'm just going to close them. It is the Rick Emerson Radio Program. You can email if you like. It's Rick at RickEmerson.com. That is Rick at RickEmerson.com. Or Dawn at RickEmerson.com. D-A-W-N at RickEmerson.com. Isn't that right?
That's right. Was I doing something amusing? Or were you just laughing at the Family Guy jokes? I remember you were looking at me and you were smirking. So I didn't know if I...
wasn't smirking. I was smiling. Now full of enthusiasm for life.
Now I just keep thinking, am I doing that Joe Cocker thing again?
But this is like yesterday when you were using a piece of paper to clean between your teeth. Was that what you were doing, or am I just, or are you, do you have to file them down like a hamster, or they just keep growing?
Yes, that's what I have to do. That's why I'm eating nuts today, because it helps. If I nibble on nuts, it helps file down my teeth.
Okay. Is that hamsters that do that, or is it gerbils?
I think it's guinea pigs.
Do they chew on the bars of their cage?
Yeah, they have to chew on like wood or the bars of their cage, stuff like that, or their teeth will just keep growing and growing and growing until they're crippled.
I sat and looked at you for like, I don't know, I watched you for like 60 seconds, I think, yesterday, because you were sort of like staring off into space, and then you had the whole process. It was like you picked up a piece of paper, you folded it in half, folded it, I think, again, and then you turned it sideways and went, and you were flossing between your teeth with a piece of paper from the printer. It was awesome.
I am so classy.
I was watching it just thinking, well, that's interesting. You don't see that every day.
A year ago when we were talking about doing this show together, I have to admit there was this part of me that was thinking, oh my God, how am I going to sit in a room with Rick Emerson all day, every day? He will discover all of the many, many ways in which I am disgusting.
Well, there are other facets to the gem that is Dawn Taylor.
Yes?
I don't even want to read this thing about real doll porn. Thank you for joining us. It is Wednesday. Coming up here in just a bit, we'll have clue number three for this week's Name That Snack Contest. And so forth at the news desk, it's Dawn Taylor.
And now, from the news desk, this is Dawn Taylor.
According to a lawsuit filed this week, American Apparel founder Dov Charney allegedly turned a teenage employee into his sex slave, forcing her to send him nude pictures and texts before he assaulted her on her 18th birthday, just months after she returned to work following a nervous breakdown. Mr. Charney, who demanded the woman come to his New York City apartment the day she turned 18, answered the door in his underwear, dragged her inside, and forced her to her knees so she could pleasure him, according to the lawsuit, which demands $250 million.
Wait, I'm confused about this. So how did they know each other?
She was an employee. I'm not sure exactly at this point what it was she did as far as...
So she worked there and
but
he...
she worked there. He apparently began harassing, according to the lawsuit, let's say that, he began harassing her in August of 2007 when she was 17, telling her she would be fired if she didn't detail her sexual history, engage in increasingly explicit sexual functions, and send him sexually explicit pictures. The pressure of his demands caused her to become increasingly nervous and depressed, forcing a hospital stay after an emotional breakdown. He forced her to work longer hours and perform personal tasks without extra pay, and then told her to come to his apartment on the day she turned 18, forced her inside, and then she says she was essentially held prisoner in the apartment for several hours, during which time he forced her to perform additional sexual acts.
And so when did this all allegedly happen? Do we know how old she is now?
Well, this was 2007, 2008.
Okay, so she's like 20-something.
Yeah, and then she was 18 then, so... Yeah. Afterward, he continued to demand sexual service and communications in exchange for her continued employment, according to the...
You see, this is one of those things where it pisses me off, though, that they won't give her name, because it's an allegation. I mean, it's like there's no proof or evidence that he's guilty of anything. Maybe he is, maybe he's not, but there's no evidence. I mean, and it's not just because she was underage, it's just a weird, like, if you accuse somebody of stealing from you, they wouldn't withhold your name.
I think we're reaching a point where we really need to see that protecting the victim in that manner thing is outmoded.
Yeah.
Because
she's not a victim yet.
Right,
he hasn't been convicted of anything.
She's the accuser, and if it turns out she actually was victimized by this guy, she has nothing to be ashamed of.
Right. Because all it does is say that she's so fragile and delicate, you know, and flawed as a person that is why this happened to her, and therefore she needs to be protected because it's shameful that it happened to her.
Well, it's a lot like knee-jerk reactions to sexual harassment stuff in the workplace. It, you know, it's this atmosphere that continues this belief that women need to be protected by men and from men, and that we can't, you know, stand up for ourselves, we can't take care of ourselves, and that, you know, I'm sorry, if you are the victim of sexual harassment, if you're the victim of assault in this case, you know, you don't have anything to be ashamed of. You should come out and you know, and again, people, if he didn't do it, you know, I think he has the right to
have the name of his accuser public. Well, that's like that Crystal Magnum chick that, you know, accused all the Duke guys, you know, the Duke lacrosse guys of, you know, and then it just turned out to be a bunch of malarkey. And that was the thing. That was the thing where her name was only ever known because Tom Likas said it. You know, because he was the one who got a hold of her name and just announced it because they hadn't ever been. And the other thing is they don't do it in this story, which I was checking and see. I do think you're right in that. Like, is it Moores or Moores? I think it's Moores.
I think it's Moores, but it's like
is it like a fake fancy pronunciation we put on it there?
It's like foyer and fort. Like words that we actually pronounce incorrectly because we think they should be fancy.
Because it looks like it might be foreign. They're not doing it here. So I think that things are – I think that those sort of mores are changing. But for a long time, they would actually refer to the accuser as the victim, mm-hmm. which is a thing that – and you would think that newspapers, like journalists themselves, would have caught that decades ago as being just, if nothing else, like factually inaccurate. That's knowingly – That is knowingly reporting a story inaccurately. So at least they're not doing. And again, who knows? Maybe he's guilty. Maybe he's not. But that is strange. Also, what kind of a name is Dove?
Yeah, Dove.
With no E on the end of it. You know, the thing about American Apparel. Well, I've already said that I typically don't shop there because it's just so unbelievably expensive. I mean, at least for what I'm willing to pay for like a black T-shirt. But then American Apparel seems to have made an entire industry. It's like sometimes you'll hear bands that made an entire career out of ripping off some other band's like a single song. Like somebody's, you know, like some band heard like, you know, Even Flow by Pearl Jam and said, let's make our entire career sound like that. American Apparel seems to make their entire industry like that one series of creepy Calvin Klein ads from the 90s where it was a bunch of kids being molested in a trailer park or something. Where it's like bad wood paneling and then dad's in there with a rolling pin or something.
Yeah, I mean, at least with, say, The Gap, the clothes are slightly overpriced, but they're good quality, and I think that they have relatively straightforward and wholesome seeming ad campaigns. Yeah, American Apparel, it's like ridiculously overpriced simple clothes that is sold with this whole heroin chic.
Yeah, that was the thing, because it's all these bony teens like bumping their pelvises together. God, I sound old.
You do.
And hip hop. That's the other problem.
That noise. It's just noise. You can't understand any of the words. Kids today.
Here's Don Taylor at the news desk.
Let's do our Cannibal Watch.
Okay. Here's your Cannibal Watch. We haven't had one of these in a while. Here's Cannibal Watch for Wednesday on the Rick Emerson Radio program. Don Taylor with your Cannibal Watch for Wednesday.
A 32-year-old Swedish man who decapitated his girlfriend and then ate parts of her body was convicted on Tuesday of murder. The Skövde District Court sentenced Isakin Johnson, referred to in the press as the Skara Cannibal, to time in an institutional Timon's institutional psychiatric care. Johnson was arrested last November after calling police from his apartment in Skara in central Sweden and explaining that he had killed his 40-year-old girlfriend. He had also cut off her head and other parts of her body, some of which he then ate.
The girl who made a tasty souffle.
Johnson told the court, I remember how I slit her throat. Then I went to the kitchen and started cooking. The call Johnson made to emergency services in which he confessed to the crime was also replayed during the trial. He said in the call, when you come here, you don't have to go after me. I'm as calm as can be.
Worst Swedish chef ever.
At the beard, he said in his call to 911.
Just like hands and hands flying everywhere on the screen.
The day of the murder, Johnson and his girlfriend had gone shopping before returning to the apartment they shared together. In the evening, Johnson's girlfriend laid down on a mattress to rest, at which point he came over with a knife and sliced up the mattress before sitting on the woman's shoulders and cutting her throat. The prosecutor told the court that with a knife, saw, and scissors, he removed the head from the body. Johnson has been found to suffer from severe mental illness.
You think?
And showed no remorse in court. He says, I stand for what I've said, and I stand for what I did.
The scissors is sort of a an interesting choice. Like, what? I mean, you don't. You think if you've got like a knife and a saw, the scissors are. Unless he worked his way up. Unless he would like started with like nail clippers and just. Damn it, these are just not.
That's not like that. So like when you're deboning a chicken, and sometimes you're trying to get like those extra crispy parts out of there. And you just need the leverage that a good set of kitchen shears can give you.
The extra crispy.
Yeah.
Okay. All right.
The snippy bits.
Okay. There you go. There's your cannibal watch. Does it say which parts he ate or if he prepared them?
No, it didn't.
That's the sort of thing that I'm always curious about. Like if he goes, you know, like for a lung or something, or if it's just, you know, your typical nose and earlobe.
Yeah.
All right. Well, there you go. There's your cannibal watch, Swedish edition. Someone, and this comment has been echoed several times, by the way. Someone says, how you feel watching Family Guy is exactly how I feel listening to your show, FYI.
So read those two sentences down at the bottom that I marked.
He was unable to explain the gruesome killing when asked by prosecutors why he did it. Quote, "That's something I also wonder about. I trust the doctors. There was no motive whatsoever. We were a couple with a future together. I've never felt this way with a girl before," quote he said, according to expression.
God. Why did you do it? You know, that's something I wonder,
you
too.
Know, who can say why anybody? The heart wants what it wants. All right, good.
And I wanted to eat her heart.
God almighty. All right. We should take just a brief moment here to talk about Squires Electric. They're the proud sponsor. Proud might be overstating it, actually. They're the sponsors.
They're the tolerant sponsors.
The reluctant sponsors of the Rick Emerson radio program. You can contact them at 503-252-1609. It is 503-252-1609. Or you can go online and you can discover more about them by going to SquiresElectric.com. If you are a business owner, if you are a homeowner, or if you are somebody who's thinking about expanding into business, you're going to be opening a business, and you get – and there's that whole – you know, that whole thing where you just get, like, the endless list. I mean, just 9,000 things you got to get done before the business is actually going to be ready to open. And, of course, multiple different inspections and inspectors coming through. And Joe Squires talked about that before, where people will actually sometimes have Squires Electric come out and basically just act as the inspector would to do a sort of a pre-inspection, almost a mock inspection, to make sure that there's no issues that are going to come up. Because the thing is, that you get the issue there. If they spot it, then they're going to be able to spot it, fix it, solve it, done. You know, the inspector, the city comes out and he spots it. You know, first of all, if you're not open, you're not going to be able to open. If you're operating, you might have to close, or it's going to cost you a substantial fine. And then you, on top of that, you still got to pay to get the thing fixed or upgraded or repaired or whatever it is. So take care of that. There's no need to measure twice and then cut five times. You just get taken care of. Have Squires Electric come on out to your business. They will inspect it. They'll make sure that you're going to pass whatever it is you got coming up in terms of a top to bottom look through by the man. If you're going to be moving into a new house, you're going to be renting your house out, or you're going to be selling your house. Actually, you want to make sure that you are not buying or inadvertently selling the pig that has been poked, or a poke that's been pigged. I don't know how that works. But you contact Squires Electric at 503-252-1609. Free estimates, no job too small or too large. They have, we mentioned that they actually started with one guy that went to his house. They fixed a single outlet, a single socket, and then later on, like a three-story building for him. So if it has to do with wires or wiring in your home or business, they can make your life easier. They are Squires Electric. Isn't that right, Don Taylor?
Yes, indeed.
Here's Don Taylor at the news desk. Pardon me, I'm going to have another one of these almonds, if you don't mind.
Okay, you help yourself. All right. I was going to suggest we do the clergy watch, but now your fingers are busy doing other things.
All right. I'm good.
Okay. Clergy watch.
Oh, hold on. Sorry, I spoke too soon. Okay. No, I'm having to navigate the soundboard with my left hand.
Oh, okay.
All right, 1 second.
Hey.
You ever wonder why certain people are left-handed?
Isn't there kind of a brain thing that makes you that way?
Yes.
Yeah.
I don't know what kind of brain thing made me ask that just now and then accept that as an answer. That was just stupid. Here was your clergy watch. Oh man, these wasabi almonds are fantastic, but I should know better than that, but I just do that thing. You ever do this where you're having, usually it's wasabi, but often it's something else, And you do that thing where you get like a backdraft up inside your nose.
Yeah, you breathe like you're chewing it and you breathe in through your mouth and it goes up into your sinuses.
And it's like, I'm 38 years of age. I should know not to do that by now, because normally I can eat really hot stuff and I don't get that. Because that is not even thinking about even being resistant to spice. That's just where you're scoring out your nasal passages. Yeah. All right, here's Don Taylor.
In a sudden reversal, the Archdiocese of Philadelphia announced Tuesday that it had suspended 21 priests over credible charges that they had sexually abused minors. Last month, Cardinal Justin Regali rejected a grand jury's finding that the church had dozens of possibly abusive priests in the ministry. But Tuesday, he admitted that 29 of the priests the grand jury identified should have been suspended. Five had already left the church and three others had already been placed on administrative leave. The other 21 were notified of their suspensions over the last few days. The names have not been released, but church spokeswoman Donna Farrell says local parishes will be advised if they're affected.
We'll be making announcements in all of the affected parishes regarding the priests who have been placed on administrative leave.
Is it like one of those things you see in the back of the like in the back of the newspaper where there's somebody like filing a class action lawsuit? And if you believe that you have been injured by Hertz Rent-A-Car.
The Archdiocese said the cases against the priest ranged from allegations of sexual abuse of a minor to boundary issues with minors, although they did not explain what they meant by boundary issues.
What is a boundary issue? Is that where they're not actually it's not like an actual raping?
Yeah, they're saying sort of they're saying the allegations basically ranged from the cases ranged from people blaming them for stuff that they may or may not have done to maybe getting a little touchy.
Is boundary issues like where it's just creepy?
Yeah.
Like they're giving you like a little bit of a neck rub that goes on for a long, long time.
Yeah, the hands on the knee just a few minutes too long, that sort of thing.
Yeah.
Of course, this is the Catholic Church, so boundary issues with altar boys probably contain, you know. According to the New York Times, the mass suspension was the most sweeping in the
mass suspension.
Was okay. The most sweeping in the history. The New York Times being wacky.
Yeah.
It was the most sweeping in the history of the sexual abuse scandal of the Roman Catholic Church in the United States. Church spokeswoman Donna Farrell said that this is all, of course, a matter of great concern.
Has stated that he takes those concerns very seriously. He is demonstrating that with his actions today.
What is with her voice? She's got some sort of a strange inflection going on with things. It's not even an accent as such.
Cardinal has stated that he takes those concerns
like weird thing with the word
very
today.
Seriously. He is demonstrating that with his actions today.
I think she's choking back her tears as she remembers her own childhood going to visit her parish priest.
It's totally not even the right sound. I think I was going for this with the... hey, by the way, you know where this is also applicable? Did you see that... this is not... We should close this out so it's not part of the clergy watch because it's this next thing isn't rapey at all. Hold on.
I gotta have faith.
All right. Did you see that thing that, I am actually really proud of myself because sometimes you'll get things that are forwarded to you, like everybody just sort of, there's some video or a web page or some meme that sweeps the net and then people send it to you. Every now and again, though, you're impressed with yourself because you spotted it without anybody pointing it your direction. You just happen to see it. And then when it gets forwarded to you later, you can actually go like, I saw that like 3 hours ago, which is like years in internet time. Did you see? Because it did get then forwarded to us by many people, that thing that McDonald's put up on Twitter last night.
Oh, about the,
oh my God,
the McLobster.
It's so bad. Yeah. It's one of the worst things I've ever seen. Let's see if I can actually just find this here. So this is a thing that got McDonald's put up last night. So I guess McDonald's tweeted this. And I've given up on saying that I'm not going to, you know, that I'm not going to use that word. It was a thing I just did accidentally one day and now I just do it. So this is a thing that McDonald's put up on their Twitter feed last night. And this is from the actual McDonald's. And I think I got this. I guess I did get this because I'm still receiving the Charlie Sheen stuff. But McDonald's tweets this last night. They say, despite, this is how you know, incidentally, that something has just totally and completely entered the land of non-Hipville. Despite all the rumors, there are no plans to bring McLobster or McSushi to the U.S. menu. We are working on a new menu item called McWinning. That's McWinning. Snagum.
It's interesting that cultural trends, little things that we find fascinating, can now become tired in about 48 hours.
Okay, see, so now this, I'm glad you said that, because I was actually talking to Laura about this last night, and we were talking about, of course, not even talking about Charlie Sheen as such, but we were doing exactly what you just said. We were talking about the fact, this is how lame I am. I was in the home office at our house, and I was just typing away, and I saw the thing about, you know, the McDonald's tweet about, you know, da-da-da-da, McWing, come by. And I actually went and sort of woke her up as she was drifting off to a peaceful night's sleep to share with her the horrible thing that McDonald's had just tweeted. It's like, baby, you got to wake up. She said, what, is the house on fire? No, McDonald's just said the dumbest thing on Twitter. And so I said, you know, they just put up this thing about McWinning. And I said, that is the indication that it has gone from interesting to trending to hot to volcanic to lame, like overnight. And, you know, and it's just that is how you know that is the tell that something has just become totally and completely passé in terms of pop culture relevancy. And she said, well, you know, his mania couldn't last forever. And I pointed something out. Here's the thing. His mania is ongoing. It is our mania that is actually burned off. And I actually said that out loud last night, and I realized that I had sort of impressed myself by boiling it down to that. That is the absolute one-line description of so many of these things, where it's like, it's not that Charlie Sheen's mania has abated. I saw him doing something last night, but he seemed as crazy as ever. It is, in fact, that we are on a very, very spiky but short-cycled manic depressive pattern, and that our mania over Charlie Sheen lasted like a day and a half, and then we immediately went to the sort of the depressive end, which is the don't care, you know?
Also, it's just the oversaturation of it, you know, with people talking about it on Twitter and people posting things on Facebook. And then, you know, we talk about it and then people send us, you know, emails about it. And then I turn on the TV in the evening and you've got, I think it's somewhere like about 7 or 7:30 in the evening. I'm not sure when it is, but there's these two different competing crap shows are on the same time. Like TMZ is on at the same time as Access Hollywood, which is on the same time as something else. And it was like every single one of those was nothing but Charlie Sheen right. For the entire episode. So it was like, oh, Charlie Sheen, let me get away from this. I click the channel. I'm two channels away. More Charlie Sheen news. Click, click, click. Charlie Sheen. And you couldn't get away from it. And so it's very easy to just get so tired of something so fast because the saturation comes so quickly now.
Do you remember the name of the Leave Britney Alone guy?
No.
Do you remember the name of the
I don't think I ever knew his name, though, or the Chocolate Rain guy.
Chocolate Rain guy is Tay Zonday. The only reason I know that the Leave Britney Alone guy's name is Chris Crocker is because I think that I had this discussion with somebody else a while back about what was the name of that guy that did the Leave Britney Alone and whatever. And I think Todd the Corpse described it perfectly. He said that basically what we do is we sort of pick guys up by the side of the road. And we have really, really fascinating conversation in the car with them for like a mile and a half. And then we just stop and we kick them out and then we speed away to pick somebody else up. And that's what it is. Yeah. It's like the truck going, guys, but leave me, pick me up. You know, and it's like
we're done with you.
Vanishing in our rearview mirrors. We're on our way to pick up like Charlie Sheen in this case. So, all right. It is the Rick Emerson radio program still to come. We got the, let's see, we've done the Cannibal Watch, we've done the Clergy Watch, we got like at least a penis to go, maybe a clown. Also, clue number three in the Name That Snack contest. Also, I should talk about this thing that I managed to do successfully last night, but we'll do some more news. But before we even do that, I just want to read this disturbing email so that it's in your head as well.
Okay.
I was talking about the whole fact that there's a whole fetish about just guys having sex with real dolls, and I said, what is the point? Why don't you just, you know, why are you watching that when it's effectively a replica of just having sex with a woman who's just kind of laying there? And a guy says, unsurprisingly, it exists, and B, unsurprisingly, somebody knows about that it has chosen to tell us. Says they do have that kind of porn. A real person that the guy just sort of poses and hoses, so to speak.
Oh.
So there you go. Thanks. I just wanted to share that phrase with you. Here's Don Taylor at the news desk.
Kind of like the fact, though, that he did say a real person.
Yeah.
And didn't say, you know.
A real thing.
A woman.
I had a friend of mine. Friend is overstating it. There was a friend of a friend. There was a guy that I knew some years ago in Washington who was a friend of a guy I worked with. And he would occasionally come back from lunch and he would just say, you know, he would just say, you know, like, it was actually more of a thing that would happen when you were out with him, because he would see like some girl, or there'd be some woman working at like a coffee shop, or like, you know, some girl working at a restaurant or a car wash, and he would say things like, "I'm going to go talk to it," And then he would go over, and he'd come. I remember, I'll never forget this. Never forget this one time that we were like out. It was like, and again, it's not like a guy I spent a lot of time with because, like, I really wanted to. But he was just sort of like he came with the territory because he was friends with this guy that I worked with. And so we were like out at lunch or something one day, and there was like some girl working at like a, I don't know, like a snow cone stand or something down the street. It was like summertime in Spokane, and he said, "Boy, it's really hot, isn't it?" And I thought he was talking about the weather, but like it being actually like really hot outside. And no, of course, he was in fact talking about the woman working at the snow cone stand. And he just sort of stalked off, no pun intended, to go talk to her. He just sort of strode over across the parking lot. And meanwhile, like, you know, Bob and I are having lunch. And then he comes back later really proudly waving a scrap of paper and just going, "I got its phone number." And I remember thinking to myself, like, at that moment, making the decision of I'm not going to spend any more time with this guy. Because if I do, I will inevitably be the one that they're talking to later when they're pulling bodies out of his basement, like underneath a layer of lime and asphalt. I got its phone number. Here's Don Taylor.
A 21-year-old man sitting down for a haircut allegedly grabbed scissors and slashed another man in the back Tuesday in the south end of Stamford, Connecticut. David Davis of Cedar Hill Avenue, New Haven, was arrested shortly after the incident when Stamford patrol officers and a police dog found him in a nearby apartment. Officers took him into custody when they initially found he was wanted on a warrant for failing to appear in court and later charged him in the stabbing. The victim, identified as a 21-year-old Stamford man, was taken to the hospital to receive treatment for his wound. In a statement, police said Davis was getting a haircut when the victim approached in what Davis called an aggressive manner, so he picked up scissors to protect himself. Davis slashed the man in the back. Police said the victim was wearing a heavy coat when he was stabbed, so it was difficult to say whether the wounds were serious. He said there was a considerable amount of blood in the man's clothing. And I have uploaded the photo because he was apparently only halfway through his haircut when he was arrested, and so his mugshot is awesome.
This is the thing that I saw earlier. It's the guy who has the he has like the half. It's like a half row.
Yeah.
And I wondered like what is that about, because there was no like you didn't you know give any description. It was obviously I think it was going to be paid off at some later point. I'll get that. Let's see. That is haircut gone wrong.
Yes.
All right. Let's see. I'll get this. Get that posted here.
So remember, make sure that you finished getting the haircut before you get stabby with somebody.
And so this is not the guy who's cutting the hair. This is a guy who's receiving a haircut.
Right. He was getting a haircut. Somebody came over that he found threatening. So he grabbed the scissors and he stabbed the other guy while he was sitting there getting his haircut.
No. You would like to think that the haircutting is just that everybody has. There's an unspoken but very real agreement that you just don't cause a ruckus right there, because that just ends badly for everybody.
And plus he has to go to jail with half a fro.
Yeah, well, you know, maybe it'll start maybe it'll be a new trend. Maybe it'll become the hot new thing. That's awesome. And also, here's the strange thing about this haircut is that it was like clearly it wasn't just like he was getting his monthly, you know, the monthly trim of it's around the edges or something, or just getting the back shaped. I mean, he has a huge. I mean, he has like the big the natural, as they used to say in the '70s, that he's getting taken down to basically just like your regular everyday short haircut, but now it's only half done. So it does look. The thing is, it's so bad that it almost looks awesome.
Yeah.
You can see that at rickemersonshow.com/pictures. Visual aids for March 9th. That is rickemerson.com/pictures. Visual aids for March 9th. I mean, it really is. It's so outwardly and aggressively and intensely bad that I think he might get less crap for this than he might normally, because people will assume that he's making some sort of perhaps he's making some sort of an unusual black power statement.
And he has neck tattoos and he stabbed a guy. So really, people aren't going to mock him too much.
God almighty. All right, here's Don Taylor.
Let's do our penis watch.
Here's your penis watch for
Take a look
Wednesday.
At my enormous penis. And my troubles start a-melting away. Bow, bow, bow. I take a look at my enormous penis. And everything is going my way.
There is Don Taylor with your penis watch.
Nurses have been fired from an Australian nursing home for allegedly depriving a dying man of food and photographing residents' genitals in a game they called the, quote, Genital Friday Club. One of the New South Wales top nursing homes, William Cape Gardens on the Central Coast, ran an independent investigation into the incident before firing two nurses, allegedly the ringleaders. A third nurse was suspended and has since been reinstated, while a fourth nurse resigned. The treatment at William Cape includes claims that the three nurses told an elderly woman with dementia that her husband was having an affair with her best friend while she was in care. A whistleblower told the Sunday Telegraph that when food was withheld from an elderly man, a nurse allegedly said he was going to die anyway, and this way would make it quicker. Staff were forced to sign confidentiality agreements over the scandal. The whistleblower said the Genital Friday Club had been going on for some months and was known by quite a few members of the staff. A second staff member said at least one nurse took photographs of elderly residents' private parts on an iPhone and asked colleagues to guess who they belonged to.
Is this what happens when, like, Hawaiian Shirt Day doesn't quite take off the way that they needed to in terms of morale, and they've got to just amp things up a bit?
Yeah. A spokesman for the nursing home said it was unclear how many residents had had their genitals photographed in the game. I just want to say that's just like the worst game ever.
Yeah.
Taking photos of old people's genitalia and then saying, guess who it is?
And really, what is, I mean, and how good can you possibly feel about yourself if you win that game? I mean, that you're really able to identify one wrinkled liver spotty penis as contrasted with another. What is that? That's a thing where you've lost even if you've won. You've lost especially if you've won at that game.
Yeah.
Okay.
A full investigation has been launched by the Aged Care Complaints Investigation team.
Again, that's another one of those days where you wish you just called in and just said, like, I got a little bit of a throat tickle. I'm not going to be able to do it. Because otherwise you're just investigating, like, you know. So it's something that just requires you to look at a drawer full of Polaroids of guys' shriveled members.
Yeah.
God damn. All right, there you go. There's your penis watcher.
Look at my enormous penis, and my troubles start a melting away. I take a look at my enormous penis, and everything is going my way.
All right. Switcher says, that doesn't even rhyme. You're right, it doesn't. I was wondering if Genital Friday was a play on, where was this, like in Australia or someplace?
Yeah.
If there was like, if I was there, it would all make sense. Like it was a sort of, you know, like if there was a popular television show on whose name they were riffing when they called it that.
Yeah, I don't know. I did just that maybe that, you know, Friday was the day they looked at the iPhone pictures. So I was like, it's Genital Friday, everyone.
I guess
they would have cake.
You're really just looking at a 90-year-old penis when all is said and done. There's no way to make that any better.
No.
We'll do a little break here. We'll come back on the... you have got the ham-fisted radio coming up later on today.
I do indeed.
So we'll take a break. We'll come back so we can get underway, get everything taken care of, because you are going to be over at Cascadia.fm mm-hmm. today, 4 p.m. Pacific time with Mr. Bobby Fatboy Roberts. About what will you be speaking?
We will probably be talking, if among other things, we will probably be discussing the works of one Bruce Campbell, because today is Ash Wednesday.
Yeah, wow. I didn't even put that together. I am filled with shame. We're back after this. It's the Rick Emerson radio program. Don't go anywhere.
You're listening to the Emerson News Network.
I've got Dungeon Master's Guide. I've got 12-sided die. I've got Kitty Pryde and Nightcrawler too, waiting there for me, yes I do, I do. I've got posters on the wall, my favorite rock group Kiss. I've got Ace Frehley, I've got Peter Criss, waiting there for me, yes I do, I do. In the garage I feel safe, no one cares about my ways. In the garage where I belong, no one hears me sing this song. I play my stupid songs, I write these stupid words, and I love everyone waiting there for me, yes I do, I do. In the garage I
You're listening to the Emerson News Network.
It's the Rick Emerson Radio Program. Here's the thing about this bottle of Maker's Mark that's been sitting over here.
Yeah.
I'm not entirely certain that Siegfried realizes he left that behind. And so at some point, I wonder if he's actually going to stop by the studio and go, yeah, I just like came back to get my bottle. Okay. And then and there's just going to be like, it'll be like that, like the carton of milk that nobody wants to replace. So there's like a quarter of an inch just sort of floating at the bottom.
That's a pricey bottle of bourbon.
Yeah.
Yeah, it seems like there was a lot more just the other day.
Yeah, well, yeah. It was when I took one shot out of it, and it was up kind of to the bottom of the neck when I did a shot of it.
So and that now, was after it had been used for its intended purpose, by the way,
yeah.
of Ashley's recording session over the weekend.
So, yeah.
That's great. I mean, on the one hand, you can say that, I guess, booze that's just sort of set on the shelf, I guess we shouldn't really be surprised that it kind of vanishes. It's also indicative of the notion that there is sort of a like community property view of anything that is just put on that dresser. You know, like over there on this like bookshelf, that if there's anything there that is alcoholic, it's just widely assumed that it can just be ingested by any and all who pass through, which I guess is true. So there you go.
Yeah.
That's what sets this apart from maybe less interesting jobs or places where you've worked in the past. Have you ever worked at a job where you could just take it, you know, just have a, you know, like a belt in the middle of the day if you wanted to? Probably at newspapers you could.
No, by the time I was in newspapers, it was frowned upon. You weren't supposed to technically drink on the job as a chef. But it was known to happen.
Yeah, that's a thing that I mean, and maybe that's ill advised on some level, but it seems like that goes with the territory.
And plus, it's a little bit easier to get away with because you know, basically, you've got booze around, you're cooking with it,
right?
You know, and there's, you know, it's like I would make truffles and go to the bar. It's like, you know, one shot of bourbon for the truffles, one shot of bourbon for Dawn.
Hey, is cooking sherry a thing that they... I don't know anything about this. Is cooking sherry a thing that is only used for cooking? I mean, theoretically.
Theoretically, yes, because it tastes horrible.
So it's not like a booze for drinking that they discovered they could cook with.
No, no. It's just real cheap crap that you can cook with. It does add a decent taste to something, but honestly, you know, there's this theory that you should never cook with a wine that you wouldn't drink. Because you can still taste bad
because you can
wine,
taste it
even
in
if
there.
It's been cooked.
Hey,
yeah.
Let me ask you this: we were talking about the Rocco's earlier, and you know, Kelly, you know, was pointing out some other. You know, and it's not like it was like the greatest pizza in Portland or something. It was just for me, it was equal parts the food and the atmosphere, which it was sort of the atmosphere at that place was great because it was authentically beat down and beat up and grimy and sort of not dirty, but just like. But just sort of like worn. It was like some denim and leather combo that had been worn, you know, every single day of the owner's life for like 80 years. Until you get like, you know, you see a guy with like the blue jeans and the jacket where it's like they're held together by dust. That's kind of what Rocco's was. It was the restaurant equivalent of like some sort of biker wear that was just being held together by wishes and duct tape. And I did also like the food, but this just does underscore something. There are a lot of fantastic places in Portland to get pizza. And I'm just speaking for myself now, because I know this is a divisive or a divisive issue. It's like talking about favorite hamburgers or something, and it's like people will just get into fistfights about it. So I'm just saying for me, I'm not trying to make anybody else agree with what I'm saying. I'm saying for me, pound for pound, the best pizza in Portland is American Dream on Gleason and 60th, which is like, I mean, really, honestly, and it's like in the top five that I've ever had in my life. I mean, it's like it's as good as pizza gets. It is awesome. But there's this thing that I can never get a straight answer out of them about, and it's whether they put beer in their crust. Because for all the world, I swear to God, since the first day I had that pizza like 10 years ago, it tastes like the crust has beer in it. And you ask people there and they're sort of they're a little coy about it, but I think that could be either because they don't want to say that it's there, or they know that story has gotten around, and they don't want to say it's not because they know that it adds intrigue or whatever to it. So, as somebody who cooks, is that a thing that they would do or that you could do?
I guess you could do. Most likely, I would say it's probably attributable to whatever kind of yeast they use in the crust. That they may have a specific yeast that gives off a strong enough flavor that it gives it kind of a beery flavor when you get like the caramelization of the sugars in the crust and then along with the flavor of the yeast.
Because that's the one of the in beer, it's like hops and whatever, and then yeast is put in there to ferment it. And so it's odd. I've never had a pizza that has that same flavor to the crust ever. And also until this very moment, I didn't know there were different kinds of yeast. So let me ask you this. This has just become one of those things where now I just interrogate you endlessly about the crap I've always wondered. So they talk about yeast being like a living thing or being what does that mean? I mean, where does it come from? There aren't yeast eggs. There's like a mom and yeast dad somewhere that are just sort of – I mean, where does it come from?
I'm not sure how exactly yeast reproduce, but they are living – they are little living things.
But I mean, do they find them like they don't scrape them off the ocean floor or something? I mean, they must come from somewhere.
They're like bacteria. I'm not sure how bacteria multiply either, because that's a science thing I don't understand. I do know yeast are like basically like they're like bacteria or viruses. They're tiny little
like spores or
animals.
Something?
Not really spores. They are living things. And what happens is when you buy yeast, whether it's the dry yeast or like the cake yeast or whatever, they're sort of in suspended animation. They're asleep until they get warm. And that kind of wakes them up. That's why you use warm water. Whenever you go to make something with yeast, basically you start with water, warm water, a particular temperature, because if it's too hot, it will actually kill them. But warm enough that it wakes them up, and then you add sugar to the water, and the yeast start to eat the sugar. And they eat the sugar, and basically they just like burp and fart out the sugar.
It's so disturbing all of a sudden.
They metabolize the sugar. And that's what causes the foaming, the carbonation. That's where the leavening comes from, the air. They're basically a bunch of tiny little guys that are farting out the sugar that's either in the water that you added or in the product that you're putting them in.
Farting out the sugar. Dawn Taylor story. This is, makes it sound like it's that Futurama thing where they're like, where they're eating that plant or whatever that turns out to be like a bunch of, quit eating our young, the problem with poplars or something.
Well, it's the same with sourdough and sourdough starter. It's a similar thing where you have, rather than having yeast or like dry yeast, you have an actual hunk of dough that is crawling with all of the yeast bacteria, the sourdough guys, and then you take that and you add it to your new batch of flour and sugar and water, and it creates more, and then you add that to your flour and you have the bread. But you keep a hunk of the original sourdough starter like in the fridge, and it's sleeping and waiting until you need it.
It doesn't
to grow
it doesn't
and multiply.
Right. That's so bizarre.
Yeah.
I never really thought about this. Like, you had a packet of Fleischmann's yeast or something that it's just like a bunch of guys in, like, hi, just sort of hanging out.
Yeah, they're like sea monkeys. They're like dried out and just sort of sleeping and waiting to
weird.
Be activated.
They're like a culinary. It's like a packet of Mexican jumping beans. But for the kitchen. Let's see. Who might this be? Hello, sir. Madam, is the case. Maybe you're on the Rick Emerson radio program.
This is Mailman Rick, guys.
Hello. Hi. How are you, sir?
I'm doing fine. Have you just come up with a show for you both to watch together?
Okay.
And what is your suggestion for that? We're looking for a new show that Dawn and I can watch. Not even a new show, but necessarily a show that we have not yet seen that we can be watching simultaneously. What might that be?
The British version of Life on Mars.
Which I have never seen, and I wanted to because I loved the premise so much, and the American version was just crap. I didn't like it at all. But that was the thing where it's like a cop goes into a coma or something, and then he wakes up, and it's like 1974 or whatever, right?
73, and it's in Manchester, where the cops in Manchester were a little bit more hands-on. In a bad way, in many ways.
It was a more rough and tumble time.
Yeah, and very well done show. But when they tried to make it American, they went too weird.
Yeah, well, it was like, and I had real difficulty with that because there was a part of it was me with that Life on Mars thing here because they made some casting decisions that just made it difficult for me. Like I could not the Michael Imperioli guy. I found it tough to get past the fact that he wasn't a soprano anymore because I just always picture him as Christopher Moltisanti or whatever. And then they also took the guy who plays Lester Freeman on The Wire, and they put him in there. And there you are really just shooting yourself, not even in the foot. You're just shooting your face, like right in the, you're shooting yourself right in the face if you cast a guy from The Wire in any other cop show ever, because it just because all you do is you immediately compare it. So that was my difficulty, and they did, and they were just way too heavy handed with the hey, look at our crazy hair, look at my pants, they're huge around the ankle, and oh, it's the World Trade Center. But the British version, how long did it run? Was it like one of those things that just goes for five seasons, or was it on for or a few episodes, or was it on for a long time?
Two seasons, about 14 episodes total, I believe. They did it. The other thing was, is when they were talking about casting the American version, originally Colm Meaney, who is closer to the original's character than Harvey Keitel was.
And is it the thing they did the British version? And I don't want to give any spoilers or anything, but did it just sort of trail off, or did they have like an actual end to it? I mean, did they wrap it up?
They have an end, but they don't explain. They leave it up to you.
Oh, I see. They have an Abrams ending where just sort of they go, and there you go. Wasn't that great? It was God. And then you just go, oh, okay. Is that on? Is that on DVD or Netflix? The British version? Can you get that here?
I know it's. I haven't seen if it's on Netflix or Blockbuster online, but I do know that Amazon is selling the DVD packets for the first and second season.
Awesome. Life on Mars, British. Life on Mars. Because I'm not really watching it, because I got that Jekyll show that I got to watch at some point, and then Luther is like on hiatus or whatever until its second season. So I'm not really watching anything continental at the moment. So I need to augment my plate.
Jekyll's really good.
Don, did you watch Jekyll?
I did.
Because Cheryl gave me the hard sell on that, too.
Jekyll's quite good.
So I got to watch that. Excellent. Thank you, my friend. I appreciate it.
Another one is the British version of Being Human,
which I have also heard good things about. So
I've actually seen that, and yeah, it is good. I haven't been able to bring myself to even try to watch the American version, because why bother?
What would be the point? Excellent. Thank you, my friend.
You have a good day, guys.
You as well. There you go. That is Man Rick. Awesome. Hey, by the way, just speaking of, nobody knows that we were just speaking of this, but during the break just now, you did something that is universal. Speaking of being human, Dawn, and things that are relatable, you just did that thing where you were looking around, scrabbling on the floor, and I did this last Thursday, and Anna Griffin looked at me like I was on crack. I think I looked like one of those guys who can't find his Coke, and so I'm just on the floor snorting anything white. I lost under the table the silicone. What did you call it? A little nipple?
I called it the ear nipple.
The ear nipple
off of my earbuds.
On the earbuds, that it's like the little silicone bendy squishy part. And they go, without which the things are useless.
Yeah.
That's what sucks.
It won't stay in your ear.
And so then you got to go buy another pair for like $35 or something. Unless you can go on. Although I think now you can go online and buy like spares or something.
Yeah, these came with a pair of spares, but again,
were they spares of the same
it's
size?
It's been like a year, so I probably won't be able to find them. They're in my house somewhere.
And I have one drawer where all of those go, but I realized the levels of absurdity it had gotten to when I was looking for a spare the other day, and it's like I opened the drawer and there was like 90 of them. But again, it was like the ones that are the right size to fit in my ear. Because if they're too big, then it's hurting, where you're just like, ah, just shoving it in, and it's like you're just jamming that thing from Wrath of Khan into your head. But then they're too small, then they just fall out. So never mind. But sometimes when you buy those things and they come with the spares are of the same size. And those are the kind that you really want to you find some of those, especially if they're reasonable price. You want to buy like all the store has, because you'll never, ever, ever find them.
I'm pretty sure these were the same size. But the thing is, I had bought these originally for my husband, and the iPod I bought him and this and some other things were sitting on his desk in our home office, because we have two desks.
And they became yours.
And his desk becomes just this place where he just dumps boxes full of, little Warhammer figurines and boxes of Dungeons and Dragons books, and things just sort of pile up and become crazy. And so I'm sure it's on that desk maybe somewhere, but I have no idea.
All right. So. Did you find the other one? Is it
No, I don't know where.
So this is how lame I am. So last Thursday, Anna Griffin's here, and we're in a break. And I looked down, and I think I have one of them up here on the desk because I was doing some editing or something. And I realized that one of the little rubber nipples has fallen off the end. And so here's what a retard I am. So now that I'm on the ground, and it's all awkward because it's like, it's like we're all just here to bring it. Suddenly Rick Emerson is just on all fours under the table. But I'm there with like the iPhone using like my flashlight app.
I was just doing that too.
Yes, shining the flashlight app all around on the ground trying to – and I'm like, there it is. And I just look like some insane, crazy hoarder person who was like, like the newest addition to my naval lint collection has gone missing, and so I got to find it.
Well, here's one. I'm not sure why they're this cheap, but 10-pair medium replacement silicone earbuds cushion tips for, and these would be for Sennheisers, not for mine. I don't know if they would fit or not. But on Amazon, for 1 cent.
Yeah, you know what I bought on Amazon actually just the other day was one of those the Clear Touch keyboard cover that Sarah got so she doesn't spill more whiskey into her computer. And that's the thing where it's like if you go to like whatever the store, it's like $92 or something, or you know, it's like $30. But it's like it's the strangest thing, this the strange economies of scale and brick and mortar versus online retailers. I bought it. I think at the Mac store, at the Apple store, it's like $27. I got it online for $1.73. Like the shipping, I think, was more than the actual thing, which is just weird. But this is actually a great way to bring it all back around, because I said at the beginning of the show that I did this thing last night that I have never before successfully done. But last – it was like I crossed – it was like I was breaking through the sort of ticker – the ticker tape at the end of the race. You know, when you complete – when you are the – when you are – you place first in the marathon and you cross the line and you raise your hand skyward and you say, by God, I've done it. I successfully used a Bluetooth product last night for like the first time, which I know, and I'm like the last person on earth, probably except for you and Sarah, because
you did receive one for your something for your birthday.
I was going to say our good friend Rick Rutherford, who for Christmas came by, and he knows of our love for the iPhone, and that is the business in which he works. So he brought you the iPhone case as the bottle opener. So for my birthday, he was very, very kind, very gracious, and that thing where he dropped it off, and then it's like I put my coat on it. And I didn't even really notice it. And then so like later, I was, you know, it was that thing of like, oh, I never mentioned, ah, crap. And so, and then yesterday I was going to mention it. And then I got distracted by the fact that Rob brought that cheese that tasted like bacon. And it became a whole thing. So I want to take a moment to thank listener Rick.
So easily distracted by the bacon cheese.
Seriously. It was like you just put it in front of me and suddenly the whole room, it was like I got tunnel vision. My entire world became about the bacon cheese. It's one of those things that you and I talked about when Christmas time came that it's just like so – I mean, there's no way to talk about this probably without it sounding corny or it just sounds cheesy or something. But it really is, I mean, it really is just sort of amazing and humbling and whatever that people actually would come by and give us things. Like, you know, whether it's an occasion or not.
Yeah.
Because, like,
I've yet to get used to that. I love it. I delight in it.
It's great. It's wonderful. But
it is odd.
I mean, I'm just sitting in my big ass talking about boobs all day, and it's like, and then you know, a guy comes by and gives me a thing. So for my birthday, though, he brought me some iPhone accessories, which are quite nice. But the sort of the centerpiece of it is these Bluetooth headphones, and not like the sort of earbud things. They're the kind that, you know, that go over the head. And I thought that was the thing that we'd sort of moved away from. I thought, well, what, you know, what. Why, you know, the regular headphones, isn't it all about the in-the-ear thing? But I got to tell you, the regular, like, the over-the-ear or over-the-head headphones have come, like, many, 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 many thousands of miles since, like, 1992, whenever anybody was, like, using those for a Walkman or something. It's astounding. And also, the thing about Bluetooth, which I think probably vexes a lot of people, I, in the past, have tried, like, I'm like everybody else, I bought one of those, like, little douchebag Borg things that goes on the side of your head. And I tried it, but it's like, first of all, I would just lose the thing. And then I could never figure out how the Bluetooth, like, pairing thing worked. It was like you were supposed to hold something down, and then it's like you press something else, and then it's like something would beep. And then it's like once it beeped, then you were supposed to press something else like three, and then it was paired. But then I could never figure out how to answer the phone the regular way if I wanted to answer the phone just the regular. And of course, everybody else understands it, but me. I found out later that Sarah doesn't quite grasp it, and my suspicion is that you are probably in the.
I've never used one. I have no idea how it would even work.
It just seems like one of those things that is known by all persons on earth except for like a handful of us. So when I opened the bag and there was this pair of Bluetooth headphones, and I thought, well, my first thing was to I sent him a text and I said, hey, sorry, I covered this up with my coat and then I was distracted by bacon, but thank you. And so my first thing was to do is to thank him. My second thing was to just, you know, again, feel a sort of gratitude and just a sense of how great the audience is and how very generous they have always been to us and how, you know, a great group of folks they are. But then my third thing was just this apprehension and sadness that I would not know how to use it and that it would just become another thing that caused me to hang my head in embarrassment. But I got to tell you, I went home last night. And I just buckled in and I said to myself, okay, Emerson, you're like 38 years of age. You've got to figure this out. And I have to tell you, it's not just the headphone technology itself. It is the Bluetooth technology and the simplicity with which it operates that has come a long way. Also, it must be said, the last time I tried to use something that was Bluetooth, I was on a PC, and also I was using a BlackBerry. There is something probably to be said for the fact that I have switched to an iPhone and a Mac, where they – I'm not going to say that Macs – it's not even that Macs are – it's not even that Macs are made for idiots. It's just that even idiots like myself can use them. That is how sort of intuitive they are. There, you know, there's a real advantage to that just one big button on everything. But within like 5 or 6 minutes, I had figured out how to take these little lightweight headphones, which sound – awesome, and to pair them with both my iPhone and my laptop. And so then just to impress myself, I actually wandered into the kitchen later with the laptop, and I had like an episode of The West Wing or something playing. And then I just walked across the kitchen to get myself a snack while listening to the program, accompanying me in glorious stereo sound the entire way. So there you go. So
nice.
I now am able to become that guy who has a Bluetooth thing on his headset. That's been the one tool of my on my utility belt that I haven't been able to wield against the rest of the populace, is being a guy who talks at you for a while before you realize that I'm really talking to a guy in another state altogether.
Yeah, I haven't made that leap yet. I'm still impressed with the fact that I'll be like driving home in the car and we'll have the earbuds in and listening to my iPhone, like on, you know, the iPod on my iPhone, and then the music will quietly fade out, and then the phone will ring, and then I can just punch a button and talk on the phone and hear it through my earbuds and just kind of hold the phone a little away from me so it doesn't look like I'm talking on the phone. But, you know, kind of use it kind of like speakerphone, but I'm listening through my earbuds, which
then,
is kind of awesome.
And there's when you hang up the phone and then the music goes and fades back in. And
I
you just think
that.
To yourself, like, that is really when you just you just become agog at the godlike power that you hold in your hand for just like a couple $100.
That when I'm listening to the iPod on the iPhone and I have the GPS thing going and the music and it will break into the music occasionally, say in 600 feet, turn left. And then the music just keeps playing. I'm like, this is great.
I mean, it really is. I mean, it's like, well, and again.
We're doing it again.
But it's, but this is probably thing. I mean, this is stuff that I know that everybody else figured out like years ago. And then again, because I'm an idiot. And I know this sounds retarded, but I have been intimidated by the Bluetooth thing ever since, like, I think since I lost like the second over the ear thing, you know, that cost like however much they cost at that time. And I just, and finally I was just like, I'll never learn this. And I just gave up. But I was sitting there last night. And I mean, it's a thing that really, in a relative sense, I shouldn't even be impressed by. But that I'm, you know, playing something I had, I don't know, I was like, put some song on my iPod. I'm like, it's playing on my iPod, but I'm hearing it on my headphones. But there's no wires. Like David Copperfield or something. He's just made the Lusitania appear and then disappear again in front of me. And it's a thing that everybody else was on board with like 8, 9 years ago. So it's just, the final thing about the glorious world of tomorrow in which we live today. There's an app that I got that not only will it navigate you through the New York City subway system, which is a thing that is made for people like me because I have zero spatial relation sense and I have zero ability to find my way anywhere, no sense of direction. Not only will it navigate you through the subway, not only will it show you a map of the entire New York City subway system for all 5 boroughs, not only will it calculate your subway trip, taking into account delays and repairs. I swear to God, when you put in like the destination you want to go to, whether it's a subway or whether it's a point of interest, it actually does two things. An arrow appears on the screen that literally just tells you, like, turn that way and walk that way, because otherwise I'll walk off in the wrong direction and I won't notice it until it says turn around at your first opportunity. It actually then just shows you a picture of the thing that you're going to be arriving at so that you know, like, when it's coming down the street at you. I mean, which is just...
Wow.
Here's, and what I realized when I looked at that and I realized that they have actually gone so far as to make it so I don't even have to be able to read. Like, if I can just look at the – it's like having a McDonald's picture menu where I go, me, egg, thing, in mouth. It'll just show me a picture of Famous Rays and I go, by God, there it is right there. And I walk toward the thing that looks like the picture on the screen. You know what I realized? I am the weakling who would have been culled from the herd. I mean, I am at the low end of the Darwinian scale. Because without any of this, I wouldn't be able to find my way anywhere, and I would be left behind, and they would have gone off to the great gazelle kill without me, and I would have been sitting there just, you know, drinking mud out of a hole before a meteorite hit the Earth. I mean, that I am the guy who would have been evolved out of the species dozens of years ago, were it not for technology.
Well, you and I have a similar problem in that you and I are both directionally challenged.
Yes.
We have a great deal of difficulty finding places if we haven't been there a bunch of times already before. And part of my thing, and it's funny because Patrick is like a genius. He's like the freaking Rain Man when it comes to directions, which way is north, which way is south, where something is. Part of that comes from the fact that for like the last 15, 20 years, he's been mostly had jobs being a delivery right. driver. So he can find anything anywhere in the Portland area. But also, he just has a freaky directional sense. We'll be off in the back roads of nowhere in farmland. And he goes, no, west is that way.
I think it's a thing you're just born with. It must just be in you somehow.
And me, I can only find my way places most of the time by visual landmarks, which means that next to the last time I was home, when my mother was still alive and I was going to visit my mom, and I was driving to her house, I missed the street I grew up on because somebody had torn down the house on the corner where I always turned left.
The feed store was gone.
And built a new house. And I was two blocks past it when I went, wait a minute, where's 8th Street? That's the even sadder part. I lived on a numbered street, and I drove past it.
Fantastic.
Because I was like, looking for that little gray house. That's where you turn left.
Yeah. See, this is why I'm glad that I know folks such as yourself, because then it makes me feel less alone in my because you and I are also, I mean, how do I put this? It's not like I'm the smartest guy on the earth, but you and I are also very similar in that there are certain just narrowly defined areas in which we are probably, you know, maybe a little bit sharper than the average American fool. You know, it's not like I'm the dumbest guy on earth either. So, I mean, there's just areas where I know stuff. I'm smart, not like they say. But then it's like it's just balanced out by just these areas where it's like on a sim, but it's not even like my ability or skill. It's like the thing doesn't even exist. It's just like blank. It's just burned out.
Yeah, it's kind of like when you're drawing up your character sheet for Dungeons and Dragons.
Yes.
If you want to put a whole lot of points into strength, they got to come out of something like charisma.
Yes.
You know, and I think it's the same thing, is that the parts of our brains are really overdeveloped, but in other areas we balance it out by being completely retarded.
Yes.
Like I cannot do math. I actually am math dyslexic, and I can't find my way places. Another reason I am so in love with the iPhone is the GPS, because several years ago I got lost once. I was going someplace and I got lost, and I didn't have the Thomas Guide in the car for some reason, and I literally had no idea where I was. And I called Patrick and was crying. And he's going, well, what are the main... I don't know. It's like I was in Cedar Mill, was back there, but then there was this, and I don't know. And I completely panicked. And I started... And he actually talked me down and helped me figure out where I was. He wasn't even there. But I had to call him, like, on the phone to tell him I was lost. And I was completely freaked out.
I've done that. And of course, you know, being a man, I won't allow myself to cry when that happens. But I have done the thing of just... I have the thing of pulling over to the side of the road and screaming. Where I'll be, like, driving around, like, in Vancouver, you know? Which is not, you know... It's not like I'm in the boondock. It's not like I'm in the middle of, you know, like I'm in the middle of Afghanistan or something. I'll be in Vancouver where it's just like everywhere I turn, it's just like an Applebee's and a Best Buy, and I can't find anything. And then you get in one of those weird suburban cul-de-sac things where it's like you're on a Hot Wheels like figure eight track, and you're like, I've passed this same mailbox seven to where am I? And I have just like pulled over the side of the road and just beat the dashboard with my fist. I actually got lost so badly in Vancouver one time. I was just on, and I was on my BlackBerry, like trying to find some sort of rudimentary GPS to get me out. And I was lost for so long. The GPS or the BlackBerry battery went dead. So then I had no BlackBerry, I had no phone, and I couldn't find my way anywhere. So then I had to drive around randomly until I found a payphone. I got to a payphone, and then I picked it up and I dialed Lara. Same thing, just as you're calling me. Dialed Lara, and then I get the whole thing of like, this phone is not in service. So then I'm doing the thing of beating the phone into the cradle and the inside of it, and just.
Yeah.
All right, we have to end this. I will say very quickly that it is time to do this to give you clue number three for this week's Name That Snack Contest, or EH Vending. We had a lovely listener come by yesterday to pick up her selection of consumable goodness from EH Vending, something which could be yours if you are the first person to correctly identify this week's snack by emailing snack@rickemerson.com. That is snack@rickemerson.com. snack@rickemerson.com. And you got to do that on Friday once the final clue has been given out. You will have the opportunity to email snack@rickemerson.com. If you can identify the snack in question, you will win a large bag of caloric goodness from EH Vending. You can contact them at ehvending.com. Target.com. The target audience is everyday workers or people who manage everyday workers. If you're the business owner, or you're the guy who calls the shots at the place, you're stuck in the office, you find yourself going along hours between meals, or you just get grumpy, or you get unproductive, or if it's that whole thing like at the office where you just like around 2 p.m., everybody just starts to kind of go and slow down a little bit. You'll find that really sugar is it's a miraculous substance. It has almost magical powers. So if you want to get your vending situation taken care of, you feel like maybe you're paying too much for it, or you struck a good deal for it then, but they've been slowly doing that little the rate creep where it used to cost you X, now it costs you X plus 4, plus 5, plus 6, it's going up. Or you want to be able to just look around and see if you can get a better deal somewhere. EH Vending is going to be able to find something that works for you and your budget, regardless of the size of your business. So you can contact Josh at 360-816-1853. That is 360-816-1853. Or James at 503-897-8204. That is 503-897-8204. It's, you know, the regular soda machines, snack machines, candy machines, single door, double door, triple door. And, it's, you know, it's not just a rental thing, too. If you want to flat out just buy this stuff. I mean, if you're just saying, like, look, I'm going to be stocking a place, and it's like, I just want to get it, have it, own it, and it's going to be mine. They'll actually sell it to you as well. So you can do the rental. You can do the sales.
Snacks aplenty.
That's what I'm saying. And you could just permanently equip, like, you know, you know, maybe you're trying to impress the other folks in your stake or your ward with the variety and kind and sort and manner and function in which you are storing all of your year's supply of canned goods for the year in which Satan is loosed upon the earth. I'm just saying, you got to set yourself apart somehow. So you go to ehvending.com. Clue number three for this week's Name That Snack contest is some assembly required. Some assembly required. That is clue number three for this week's Name That Snack contest. Once Friday's clue number five is given out, you identified at snack@rickemerson.com, and if you're the first person to do so, you will win that prize, that bag of consumable wonder from EH Vending. We want to thank our guests today, including Kelly Clark from Willamette Week. The Rick Emerson Show comes to you live each and every weekday from the studios of the Emerson News Network, high above the Milkpacking District in glorious southeast Portland, Oregon. At the news desk, Don Taylor, advanced technology and magic provided by Mr. Thomas Gill, executive producer Bruce Agler, chief of staff Cheryl Kanakoa. After a brief musical interlude, we'll have an encore of today's Legion of News, followed by an encore of this very fine radio program. Back again tomorrow at noon for Legion of News and slightly after one for another episode of the Rick Emerson Show. Don't forget to also listen to funemploymentradio.com later on this evening. And at 4 p.m. Pacific time today, Ham Fisted Radio with Don Taylor and Bobby Fatboy Roberts at Cascadia.fm. Also available later on at hamfistedradio.com. The Rick Emerson Show made possible by a generous grant from y'all. Please continue spreading the word. We appreciate it. Thank you kindly. It is Wednesday, March 9th, 2011, and that is The Frequency, Kenneth. As always, thank you for listening. Be safe. See y'all tomorrow. Bye now.